Pop that on your calendars now so that you can be there. And we'll be hearing, or we'll be listening, or you'll be listening to me tomorrow, I sure hope. And stay tuned right now for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up after the CBS News.
The program you have just enjoyed is a previously recorded broadcast.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. A whole lot of relief at the end of trading today on Wall Street.
This market was so heavily oversold. We're sort of looking for a relief rally in here someplace. We certainly got it this afternoon. It will be very interesting to see if we have any kind of follow-through tomorrow morning.
Stephen Porpora at William O'Neill says you might want to see how your 401k is doing. Early in the day, the Dow was down more than 300 points. It closed off less than 16 points. Eugene Peroni at Advisors Asset Management.
The market certainly started off a bit ugly, and there seemed to be real capitulation. That is, it seemed that some investors were selling at all cost, and we saw many good quality stocks falling precipitously.
Which is why the savvy bargain hunters swept in the last minutes, helped turn things around. The NASDAQ was off less than 8 points. Oil prices, $71 a barrel, down $2.33. Jose Padilla conspired with his two Muslim friends to murder Americans, and they supported terrorist groups. That's what the jury said. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen says the government was on to Padilla a long time ago.
All of the evidence that these guys were convicted by really was generated long before 9/11. These guys were being surveilled in the 1990s, long before 9/11, long before most people knew who Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda was.
Sentencing is December 5th. Hurricane Dean is growing, might be Category 4 by the time we figure out whether it is Atlantic Coast or Gulf of Mexico bound.
Maximum winds have increased to near 100 miles per hour, which makes Dean a Category 2 on the hurricane scale.
Rebecca Waddington at the National Hurricane Center. In Texas, Tropical Storm Aaron's winds died off quickly over land, but the rain was enough to flood Houston. KTRH's Tracy Evans.
The biggest problem is people not paying attention and trying to drive onto streets that are too flooded for cars. We have a lot of low water areas around Houston, and we've already seen several cars where the water is literally up to the windshield or above.
One person in Houston died. In Peru, south of Lima, people dig with their hands, with anything they can get to find more earthquake victims.
We were all together under the safe place. Everything was moving. It was very scary.
More than 450 people are dead. Hundreds more are hurt. International aid is flying in. At the coal mine in Utah, where six men are trapped more than a week and a half now.
It's just going disappointingly slow.
Murray, that's Robert Murray, he's the owner, says they have dug less than half their way to the men, and there's still no sign of life down there. Not yet. One city councilor in New Delhi, in India, is suggesting rounding up thousands of stray dogs and sending them to Korea, where he says they could feed many, many hungry people. Dog meat is regular fare in Korea, where dog soup is believed to improve stamina and virility in men. This is CBS News.
I'd never gone through commercial real estate experiences before, and there was a lot I did not understand.
I bring my knowledge, my background, and my experience to the table.
Our realtor was able to really hone in, and that's when we found our space.
Working with my realtor saved me a lot more than money. It saved me time. It saved me aggravation.
Work with a realtor, someone who knows the commercial real estate market and can guide you through the process. Every market's different. Call a realtor today.
Definitely a smart business decision to use the realtor.
Only realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Sears Book Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought four Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at $9.59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of four select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply. See store for details on offer and the Sears Price Match Plus policy.
The tabloid shots of Jenna Bush in love were real. She's engaged to be married now. CBS's Mark Noller.
The engagement raises the possibility of a White House wedding, but no date or other plans have yet been set. Jenna Bush and John Hager have been dating for several years and have been photographed in a passionate embrace. In an interview 2 years ago, First Lady Laura Bush called Hager a very nice young man, but didn't see him as a serious boyfriend of Jenna's. That has clearly changed.
We're told Hager popped the question yesterday in Maine. Max Roach has died. He was a drummer of the First Order, a jazz drummer whose innovations and ability to improv helped define bebop jazz. Blue Note Records calls him a prodigy. Picked up some sticks one day when he was a kid and started tapping. Self-taught. Got his break at age 16 when Duke Ellington had him fill in for 3 nights for his drummer who'd become ill. That was 1940. Max Roach was 83. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Will you love me when I'm 6?
Of course I will love you when you're 6.
Will you love me when I'm 10?
I will love you when you're 10.
They'll always be your little one, which is why we've introduced the all-new 2008 Ford Taurus, rated the safest full-size car in America.
When I'm 15?
And while you can't engineer a mother's love, you can engineer safety. And according to NHTSA government crash tests, Taurus earned perfect 5-star crash test safety ratings for front and side impacts. Plus, with optional electronic stability control, Taurus is an IIHS top safety pick.
Will you love me when I'm as old as you?
Even when you're as old as me.
The all-new 28-mile-per-gallon Ford Taurus. Visit your Ford dealer or go to FordVehicles.com.
Based on both NHTSA 5-star crash test ratings and with optional ESC, IIHS top safety pick. Star ratings are part of the U.S. Department of Transportation SeeForCar.gov program. www.seeforcar.gov. EPA estimated 18 City 28 Highway Front Wheel Drive.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Emanating from the great city of San Francisco. I'm glad to have you listening here along the left coast. Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz, Eureka, Coos Bay, and Portland, Oregon. We've got a lot to talk about and some interesting people to talk with on the program today. Coming up in a moment, we'll get an update from the Center for American Progress, Matt Corley at the Progress Report and Think Progress. Also on today's program, progressive activist Mike Lux will join us. We're going to talk about Karl Rove's departure, his tweaking of Hillary Clinton in the last few days, and some comments that Mike has posted about the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC. I think you'll find that interesting. Also on today's program, Scott Dick in his regular appearance. He's our contributor on military and veterans affairs. He'll be with us next hour. We'll talk about the gruesome coordinated truck bombings in northern Iraq that have claimed at least 200 lives, probably far more. Also, a flap over the Petraeus report. Is it actually going to be written at the White House, the report about the surge that is due in mid-September? And also, the rate of suicide among American service members has climbed again this year. That and other topics we'll discuss with Scott Dick coming up next hour. And then we're going to meet a writer, a lawyer, and a father. Richard Wyrick adopted 2 children from Siberia in Russia. And he's written a fascinating new book, a collection of 100 Siberian postcards. He's also a journalist, reporter, and he was there during some of the interesting events of the past 5 to 10 years, including the uprising in Chechnya and the crackdown by Vladimir Putin. So he'll be joining us in our third and final hour today. And the best way to communicate with us, you can send me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, during or after the show. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Our regular Faz Shakir is taking a little vacation, and so is the Progress Report. That's the daily update that comes from the Center for American Progress in Washington. They're on a late August hiatus. But thinkprogress.org, the update and blog site at the Center for American Progress, is very active. And Matt Corley joins us from Think Progress today. Hi, Matt.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us today. You got a lot of interesting items up. The lead item is about CBS reporter Bill Plant, who appears to have offended the White House and some conservatives because he didn't accept the ground rules for The Ascension of Karl Rove. They had that helicopter photo op carefully staged, not quite like the mission accomplished one, but it reminded me of it. And Bush made a statement, and Rove made a statement, and then they just left, not permitting reporters to ask any questions.
Yeah, they got a little upset that he had the gall to actually try and ask a question at a press at a gathering where the press were told to come to. And he tried to actually get, you know, information from the White House, and that upset some people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And he's been called disgraceful. Some right-wing website called his conduct almost unbelievable. And he, you know, Hank Plant says, well, gee, you know, I didn't shout any obscenities or anything.
he said he didn't say anything as bad as what Dick Cheney said to Patrick Leahy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and, but he was, you know, he got interviewed by a CBS colleague of his today. And he was kind of like, this is what we're supposed to do. His direct quote was, our asking questions should not be dependent on what the White House thinks the mood or the tone of an event should be. The White House wanted, you know, to have some kind of emotional, touching send-off for Karl Rove, who, Karl Rove is someone who does not talk to the media much, but has a huge fingerprint on so much that has happened.
What do you mean he doesn't talk to the media? He was involved in a hardball interview with Rush Limbaugh the other day.
Oh, I meant the critical media, the non-softball media.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Plant, he is not ashamed that he tried to ask a question that, you know, when he had the opportunity. He said he'll do it again, and we didn't block quote it, but he also said, you know, I've done the same thing with Bill Clinton. I've done the same thing with Ronald Reagan. It's my job as a reporter, and I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask questions when I thought I had an opportunity. And if I didn't let the White House dictate when or where I can or cannot speak.
Yeah. Well, and the all-time Olympic champion of shouted questions of the White House is Sam Donaldson. And Hank Plant, you know, has some catching up to do.
Yeah, I think he's probably got a little careerism in this. And, you know, maybe if I get known for this, I can be the next Donaldson.
Right, yeah. Well, breaking news at Think Progress, I was a little bit surprised to see that Jose Padilla has been found guilty on all the charges placed against him in the court case in Miami. And this, of course, is the culmination of a lengthy process that actually began before 9/11. Jose Padilla was arrested and charged originally with issues that never came up in this court case. John Ashcroft virtually convicted him in the press conference announcing his arrest in Chicago, claiming that he was planning to seal up apartment buildings, turn on the gas, and then blow them up. And that, of course, led to 3-4 years in a Navy brig in Charleston, where many of us believe he was tortured, if not subjected to heavy psychological isolation and what's a good word short of torture? He certainly wasn't treated gently, kindly, and with general humanity.
I believe the euphemism is enhanced interrogation techniques, which is tantamount to abuse.
Yeah. And it's curious because we've had a couple of reports from the Padilla trial from Lou Cook, a veteran Chicago reporter. And he's covered a lot of trials over the years. And Lou said that there was no substantive evidence presented against Jose Padilla. The best that the government could come up with was some wiretapped phone calls, again, that occurred before 9/11. And for those of us who are up in arms about the NSA spying program, that means that at least the conversation was intercepted. It might not have been listened to prior to 9/11, but it was certainly intercepted, and under what circumstances, we haven't been told. So that evidence was admitted and used against him, and the conversations that he participated in that I've seen transcripts of, Matt, were not very conclusive. It was kind of, mm-hmm, or yeah, or no, I don't want to talk about that. And it seems the major evidence was this kind of an ID card or a form that he allegedly filled out when he went to an Al-Qaeda training camp.
Yeah, I believe they said that he had like 9 of his fingerprints on it. And that was like the strongest bit of evidence. But if I remember correctly, in the many stories I read on this case, the the government, they didn't allow a lot of evidence to be brought in that would have been in favor of Padilla, even though they didn't have the strongest case.
Mm-hmm.
And but I mean, clearly, you don't want to try and from afar disagree with the jury. So clearly, the jury thought that there was something amiss here. But I think the most interesting thing about this is kind of how it's kind of gives proof to the idea that, you know, our justice system can handle such things as terrorism suspects. And even though this isn't the, you know, this, he would not be tried for being the dirty bomber, which is the label that he was given by the Bush administration. And then they kept him without access to the courts in a military brig in South Carolina for over 3 years. And they finally, their hand was forced, and he had to go into the court system when the Supreme Court was going to take up the case. And they're like, maybe we don't want to go to the Supreme Court. Maybe we'll just try him for something less. And now that's what we're seeing the outcome of here. And to me, this says, you know, our court system can handle this stuff, and we don't need to have people indefinitely American citizens. It's very important to emphasize that Padilla is a U.S. citizen, and we don't need to have American citizens have their constitutional rights taken away and held indefinitely.
Yeah. Well, I see your point, and I understand that. I'm not quite with you there just because I think this was a trumped-up prosecution. And I'm sure we'll hear further analysis, and the defense failed to present a case. They seem to feel that the government's evidence was so weak that any attempt to refute it might only compound issues. And I'm not, of course, in a position to judge that, but just knowing that they put on, you know, a very brief defense and didn't call Padilla to the stand, that suggests to me that they thought that there simply was no real basis for a conviction.
I mean, that seems like a reasonable reading of it. I think one of the most interesting things is that one of the main planks, I think, of their at least intended defense was that Padilla was not in a state to stand trial because of the mistreatment he endured in his 3 years in the brig.
Right.
But that, I believe the judges ruled that none of that, kind of those claims that of mistreatment could really were allowed to be brought into the decision-making process for the jury.
Mm-hmm.
And so the defense kind of had one of their central planks of defense taken away from them.
Right.
And I can't claim to be a legal expert, but so I don't know what the credibility of the claims of denying that were or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. Well, it is very interesting, and I do agree with you that at minimum this shows that terrorism cases can be tried in our court system, and that we don't need the monkey courts, the tribunals at Guantanamo Bay that seem to lack any real foundation in the law and in due process. We're going to take a break and continue. Matt Corley is with us from thinkprogress.org. That's the blog and update website at the Center for American Progress. We'll continue in just a moment. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Hi, Bob Oliver. Don't miss UFO sightings around Monterey Bay, 11 a.m. Saturday on KRXA 540. Phone us live on air. Help confirm many local UFO stories. Then, August 25th, 26th, it's the Bay Area UFO Expo with over 80 exhibitors and speakers at San Jose's DoubleTree Inn. UFOs are real.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 22 minutes after the hour. We're talking with Matt Corley at the Center for American Progress in Washington. You can visit their blog and news breaking news site at thinkprogress.org. Oh, and we accidentally hung up on Matt. Hey, Brian, bring me that phone number, okay?
She pulled us through my team and tried to get my mission.
Hello, Matt. It's Peter B. We just dialed you back on the air because we've had a little bit of a telephone system problem today. And I'm sorry we accidentally disconnected you during the break there.
Well, happy to be back.
I wanted to talk next about a court hearing that was held Wednesday in my backyard here in San Francisco. And it was a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they were reviewing the work of the lower court, the district court judge Vaughn Walker, related to two different suits that have been brought challenging the NSA spying program, which in most respects was legalized by Congress in what I think is a really boneheaded move at the very beginning of August. And the court is wrestling with a catch-22 situation, which is that the government says that you cannot challenge the NSA spying program because there is no one who has standing to do so because nobody knows who actually has been spied upon. And so as long as the secrecy of the program is maintained, the government feels that it can dismiss any challenges to this warrantless wiretapping. I consider it illegal wiretapping, authorized by the president and the attorney general.
Well, the most interesting part about that is one of the judges, Margaret McEwen, she literally said, "I feel like I'm in Alice in Wonderland," because in one of the cases, which related to the what the administration calls the terrorist surveillance program, which has been revealed, and that one's about wiretapping without warrants or bypassing the courts and court warrants, communications where one person's in the U.S. and one person's outside of the U.S., so potentially someone in the U.S. is being wiretapped.
Right.
And this Muslim organization, the government had accidentally given them a classified document that told them, informed them that they were being surveilled upon, and the government recaptured it. And so they were saying, we have proof that we are being surveilled on, we should have standing. And because it's a classified document, even though they've seen it, the government is saying it's inadmissible and the judges can't see it. And so they got like a completely redacted document to look at. And one of the other judges said, is it true? Every ampersand, every comma is top secret. We can't see anything in this document. And the government's basically trying to shield any oversight of their activities.
Yeah. It really is stunning, and it again underscores, I'm just so deeply disappointed that Democrats in the House and Senate colluded with Republicans to ram through this bill that legalizes it, and according to news accounts, the three-judge panel wasn't too interested in the new law, and I'm not sure, Matt, does the new law include retroactivity? Does it go back prior to, or at least back as far as 9/11, or whenever the president authorized this eavesdropping?
Well, I know that one aspect of the new FISA law was an immunity aspect for telecommunication companies.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the two cases that was heard yesterday, involved AT&T and a secret room within one of their buildings that an AT&T employee had said is being used by the NSA and gave a signed affidavit saying that he believed it was part of the wiretapping program.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite know if there's, or recall off the top of my head, if there's a retroactivity aspect, but I believe that is something that was sought. I don't know if that was something that was signed into the final bill.
Right.
And
yeah.
The Democrats very much did cave on signing that bill. Not only, there were some things that seemed like, okay, everyone could agree we need to fix on this, but then in doing that, they then also signed away oversight. They loosened the language of what could be wiretapped on. Now it's not just terrorist suspects, it's foreign intelligence, which is a much more nebulous term.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not good.
Yeah. One final item on the Think Progress report today is that Tony Snow is hinting that he may be on his way out. I guess Joshua Bolton, the chief of staff of the White House, was really serious that if you stay after Labor Day, you got to stay until January of 2009.
And he laid down the law, apparently. He pushed, you know, the most powerful aide out, Karl Rove, with his line in the sand there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he said, or it was Tony who was on a conservative talk radio show, Hugh Hewitt's show, yesterday, I believe. And he said, Hugh asked him if there are any more coming up. And Tony said, yeah, probably, Josh has said that probably a couple more in the next month or so. He didn't give any hint of who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hugh put the question to Tony. You know, he said, in his words, do you intend to go the distance? And Tony said, no, I'm not going to be. And most likely, I'm guessing this has to do with Tony Snow's health, which... if you watch him every day, you can see he's got a tough fight.
Yeah, very good.
He doesn't look good.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us today. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Corley from the Center for American Progress. Coming up next, activist Mike Lux will join us from Washington. We've got a lot to talk about here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
It's fair time again, and this year we're homegrown at the Monterey County Fair. We're talking 6 big days of family-packed entertainment from Tuesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 19th. Stop by every day for free headline entertainment, including the Paul Thorne Band, War, Pam Tellis, Night Ranger, plus our homegrown band showcase featuring top local bands. Your entire family will love the free exhibits, including the Busy Bee Dogs and Hugo the One Man Band. You will love the Beer and Wine Pavilion featuring homegrown beers and wines. All this and much, much more just for $8 if you're an adult. Admission for 6 to 12-year-olds is only $4, and kids under 6 get in for free. Kids' Day is Tuesday, Seniors' Day is Wednesday, and Military Appreciation Day is Thursday. From August 14th through August 19th, the fun will be at the 2007 Monterey Fair. Don't miss it. For information and to buy tickets, go online at www.montereycountyfair.com or call the fair office at 831-372-1000. That's 831-372-1000 for the homegrown Monterey County Fair.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, where it's 33 minutes after the hour. Mike Lux returns to our program, a longtime progressive activist in Washington, D.C., was part of the Clinton administration and then formed Progressive Strategies. And among other things, he is now one of the co-founders and operators of the website and blog, openleft.com. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be back.
And I missed talking with you over the last few weeks, and as I've been explaining to people, I was deeply unplugged. I spent about 3 weeks in Italy and caught snatches of news from the United States. But as we talk, there are a couple of things I want to ask you about to help me understand, particularly the NSA amnesty bill that was passed by the House and the Senate.
Yeah, but, good luck on understanding that one. I was right here in Washington, D.C., and I still don't get what the hell happened.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a few minutes. I wanted to get your reaction to Karl Rove's departure. Were you surprised at the timing of his resignation?
You know, there have been sort of rumors and mumblings for a while. I don't have any insight into Karl Rove's, weird and perverse brain. I had no sense of whether he would sort of hang in there till the very end or leave a little bit early. And there's been a lot of interesting speculation as to why. Many of my friends think that it's because, he's got more legal problems on his hands. I suspect that's not the case, just because he's more protected being in the White House, in terms of legal problems with the White House counsel working for him for free, than he is, out on his own, when it comes to legal troubles. I suspect the reason that he's leaving at this particular moment is because, he can still cash out in a very major way here for the next 16 or so months before there's a new president. He has given jobs to most of the people working in various agencies. He knows where every single body is buried because he was the one who had the shovel most of the time. This guy will be able to rake in multi-million-dollar contracts from corporations who are looking to get their final sweetheart deal, their final contract. And he's still going to be, let's be clear, he's still going to be talking to George Bush and the gang inside every single day. It's not like he's going away to a tropical island and will never be heard from again. He's still going to be advising them. He's just going to be doing it from a different vantage point, and he's probably going to be out there, sitting on boards of nasty organizations and raising money for evil causes and doing all kinds of stuff on the outside. So,
well, at minimum, don't you think he'll get a new email address?
Well, there is that. There is that. Absolutely.
Back when it first surfaced, Mike, that they were using these off-government websites to conduct their email correspondence, I attempted to send an email to turdblossom at, I think it was bush43.com or something like that. And I was struck by my own lack of thinking, because I sent this note to him, and then it didn't bounce right away. I thought, oh, my God, maybe that is his address. But then a couple hours later, it came back, and there was no account for turdblossom at G.W. Bush 43 or whatever that was. But, what strikes me, Mike, is that they expended a lot of different resources to protect Karl Rove, particularly the last 3 years. And Scooter Libby was served up and convicted and half-pardoned, and they took, a fair amount of heat. An absorbed heat. They didn't really respond. Bush has only commented on Libby once or twice since the prosecution and commutation were completed. But it seems odd, too, because I link Rove deeply to the problems of Alberto Gonzalez, and in particular the U.S. Attorney's firings. And so this now leaves Gonzalez even more naked in many respects. And I had the idea that they were keeping Gonzalez around as a kind of heat shield to protect Rove. And with Rove leaving the government, the claims of executive privilege are much, much harder to sustain.
Yeah, you raised some very good points. And I think I don't think we will ever know, you know, the real story here. And you can sort of interpret this a whole bunch of different ways. My theory on why Gonzalez is still there is simple. This guy has helped cover up for every illegal thing that George Bush has done since he was back getting drunk driving arrests when he was a young guy in Texas. And he doesn't go away unless he wants to. Because he knows everything there is to know about George W. Bush.
Well, and to use your metaphor, if Rove knew where the bodies were buried and had the shovel, Gonzalez knows and he had the bulldozer.
Yeah, exactly. So, I wasn't thinking of him so much as a heat shield for Rove as I was. I mean, he just wants to stay. I mean, he doesn't care how much people don't like him, how much disrespect he's getting, how big a joke he is to, you know, the Senate or to, you know, everybody else in America. He wants to stay, and as long as he wants to stay, Bush isn't going to make him go because he knows too many bad things about George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in terms of the particular timing, you know, who really knows? I mean, this could be anything from, the bulldog really being right there at the door to take Rove down, all the way to, like I say, him just wanting to rake in $20 million here in the next year before it becomes obvious that Bush is leaving town.
Is Rove too toxic to work on any of the presidential campaigns for Republicans?
I don't think he's too toxic in a Republican primary. My guess is that he will quietly advise multiple campaigns. If I were Rove, that's what I would do. I mean, no reason to sign on with any particular campaign because of, you know, the public criticism that a candidate would receive. And I don't think it hurts anybody. I mean, I think among Republican primary voters, they like Karl Rove just fine. But I think staying quiet, sort of quietly consulting with his friends in multiple campaigns, since he's got, you know, former staff people working in every one of these campaigns, playing a behind-the-scenes role. But, you know, Rove has always been at his best behind the scenes anyway, and I'm sure that whoever the Republican nominee is, Karl Rove will be quietly back there, spreading his line and, encouraging the candidates to do the nastiest possible thing.
And I guess the one guy we should be able to rule out as a possible client for Karl Rove is John McCain, given what Rove did to him in South Carolina in 2000. At the same time, somebody's given John McCain some amnesia pills, because he's been able to forget all of the evil deeds that the Bush campaign did to him in that awful
yep.
episode after he did well in New Hampshire, and then they just decked him in South Carolina.
Yeah. I think John McCain sold his soul to the Bush people a long time ago, and I think that he would welcome Karl Rove with open arms if Rove wanted to help him. But Rove doesn't want to help John McCain. He doesn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would Rove want to help somebody with no money? He's just not going to. I don't think he's going to do it.
Yeah. We're talking with Mike Lux here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit the website openleft.com. And if you go there, scroll down on the homepage. There's a whole column of listings of different postings. And look for the one that's labeled the DLC Past and Present, posted by Mike Lux, L-U-X, on August 14th. And, Mike, you are clearly in anguish, or at least uncomfortable, as you offer a critique of the centrist group in the Democratic Party. And I'd like to put it this way and get your reaction. I don't support many of the policy positions of the DLC, but as a progressive, I think there's room in the Democratic Party for conservative Democrats, pro-business Democrats, and the people who populate the DLC. The problem I have is that whether it's Al Fromm or Evan Bayh or some of the other people who are prominent in the DLC, they don't seem to think it's a two-way street. And I've been particularly offended by Senator Bayh of Indiana, as he has dinged those of us who oppose the war early and loudly. And in many other respects, he attempts to marginalize the progressives who I think are an essential portion, an essential core group in the Democratic Party.
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, I have never been a DLC guy, but I've got a fair number of friends who do work for the DLC, have worked for the DLC. When you're, you know, when you work in the Clinton administration, you know a lot of people who are in that circle, and you know, I like many of them personally, and you know, like you, Peter, I don't have any problem if you want to set yourself up as a think tank that's going to offer quote unquote centrist ideas, and you come up with you know, interesting sort of policy wonk ideas that represent a different point of view. I think that's perfectly healthy. And if that's what the DLC actually was, I never would have written that post. And if the DLC was actually as conciliatory toward progressives as Harold Ford's opening lines on Meet the Press the other day, I don't know if you saw that, Peter.
No, I didn't. And tell me about that, because you referenced it in your piece.
His opening lines were basically he was on the show with Marcos from the Daily Kos.
Mm-hmm.
And his very opening lines were, you know, we want to work with Marcos and we want to work with the Netroots. We think you represent a valuable voice. I mean, he went on about it for a couple minutes about how important he thought the blogs were and the Netroots, and that he respected and admired Marcos and blah blah blah. So if that was genuinely their attitude, I would have no problem with the DLC. Would I disagree with them on some issue stands? Of course I would. But I wouldn't have a problem with them. But later in the show, in fact, toward the end of the show, when Marcos didn't have much chance to respond, Ford stuck the stiletto in and had a throwaway line about, the anti-Semitic commentary on the Daily Kos. Which, as you know, Peter, that's one of the right wing's oldest and most ridiculous lines. They blame Marcos and other bloggers for every errant line that you know one of the 500,000 people that go to the site every day put up on the site,
right?
Which is completely unfair. And so, anyway, even while he's saying he wants to be conciliatory, he sticks the knife in. And again, same with Al Fromm. Al Fromm, and I wrote this in the post, Al Fromm and the DLC have done some very constructive things at different points in their history in terms of new policy ideas. I liked some of the stuff that they came up with. They were among the first folks to push for the earned income tax credit, for national service, for more cops on the street in neighborhoods to keep the crime rates lower. They really pushed some good ideas at different points in their history. But Al has a tendency to fly off and attack, you know, quote-unquote liberals right and left.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it in a way that's not helpful at all to the broader cause.
And, Mike, let's take a break, and when we return, I want you to tell your experiences with your friend Tom Vilsack, former Iowa governor, former presidential candidate, who dallied with the DLC for a while. We'll talk about that in just a moment. I'm Peter B. Collins. We're having a little trouble with our telephone system today, and I'll give you this tip. If you call me during the break, I can put you on hold and get you on the air. We have a little problem with one of the gizmos here. So if you want to talk with Mike Lux, if you want to join this conversation, call me right now during the break, and we can get you on in the next segment. The toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment right here.
response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a bottle of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Or have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show, every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., and I want to tell you about my experiences with Monterey Salinas Transit's Bus 55. I personally have taken the bus a couple of times to fly out of the San Jose Airport. What a great way to spend $8 and avoid the headaches of driving, parking, driving, and messing with the San Jose commute. Check out Bus 55 at www.mst.org. I know, it works. Bus 55, Monterey to San Jose, runs three times a day. It works.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're talking with Mike Lux. His latest foray on the web is openleft.com. It's a great website with a lot of good information and commentary, and we're talking about a post that Mike put up the other day about the Democratic Leadership Council, the centrist or pro-business wing of the party. And, Mike, tell us briefly your experience with Tom Vilsack, a progressive who, for a while, was chair of the DLC.
Well, I think Tom was like a lot of other, progressive Democrats, or at least fairly progressive Democrats, I mean, including Al Gore, who have worked with the DLC at different points. What they have in common is that they tend to come from red or purple states. With a lot of conservative voters, and politicians, progressive politicians in those kinds of states or districts, want the mantle of moderate on their shoulders. They want to be seen by the voters in those states as a moderate, because that's the nature of those states. In order to get elected or reelected in those states, that's what you have to project your image as. And folks like Tom, who never served in Washington, never paid much attention to kind of which group said what at the national level. All Tom knew about the DLC, and honestly, you know, he should have checked it out more carefully. But you know what he knew about the DLC was you know, modest. He knew that they were considered moderates. He knew that they had dust-ups with labor unions and other folks, but because he was so progressive, he felt like, well, maybe he could mend mend those bridges. He got along very well with labor unions, for example, in Iowa. And so he felt like he could make a contribution by chairing DLC and trying to bring them closer together with labor. And once he got there, he realized that the DLC was, first of all, very much diametrically opposed to where Tom was, for example, on the war.
Mm-hmm.
Tom was very much anti-war. In fact, he was the first guy, when he was still running for president, he was the first guy to push for the Democratic Congress to block, you know, any more budget spending for the war.
Mm-hmm.
He came out with the strongest position of anybody early on.
Mike, let me jump in here. I want people to read this post at openleft.com, but I want to jump to another topic before we run out of time. Because I am really deeply vexed by the way the Democrats collaborated in the passage of this NSA amnesty and legalization bill.
Yep.
I'm not one of those people who use the euphemism about warrantless wiretapping. This was expressly illegal and intentionally done so by Bush and Ashcroft and Gonzalez after him. And the Democrats, I think, gave up not only an important political issue, but a critical constitutional issue in caving on this matter. And let me just ask you my fundamental question. Why did Pelosi and Reid permit this to go to the floor? Pelosi is against it and spoke out in blistering terms. But why was it permitted to go to the floor right before the recess?
Well, there's a couple of posts on Open Left that talk about this and also talk about the strategy from here on in. But one of them, I wrote a piece called The Culture of Caution. I really believe that Pelosi and Reid have the right instincts on a great many issues, not all of them, but a great many of them. And as you said, we're actually against this crazy thing. But I think what happens is that all of these blue dog Democrats come, you know, begging Pelosi and Reid to pass this bad stuff because they're worried about, you know, what's going to happen back home, and they're worried that there might be a terrorist incident, you know, over the August break, and then how would they look? And they're scared. Basically, they're scared of Bush, even though he's at 28%. In the polls, they're still scared of him, and I call it the culture of caution. And I think it's a problem that has hurt this party for a very long time. But we're scared. We've been beat up and abused so badly by the right wing media and the right wing communications infrastructure and all these right-wing organizations.
And I've heard that described as a battered spouse syndrome, but I'm sorry, I don't buy it. This is something they went into with their eyes open, and we saw with the way the Military Commissions Act was jammed through before the 06 elections, and there was remorse on the part of Sherrod Brown and other Democrats who voted for it. And so I really can't get too empathetic here, Mike.
Well, I'm not empathetic at all. I mean, I basically say that they chickened out. And, you know, I don't think, I mean, for example, I don't think Pelosi deserves any credit for voting against the bill when it came up. She put it up on the floor for a vote. And I think that she felt cornered, by people in the caucus who were coming and whining to her that they were going to get hurt if there was a terrorist act and we hadn't passed this stupid thing. And I think the one thing she did right is that she time limited it for 6 months so that we've got another opportunity in the fall to change it quickly. But I just think that when we cave to Bush on these fundamental issues, we look like wimps.
And so
not only do I think the policy is bad, I think the politics is terrible.
I agree. Mike, we're out of time. We'll talk again soon. Thank you very much.
Peter, it's always fun to be on.
Visit openleft.com and read more about it. Coming up next, Scott Dick joins us on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I told our people, get information without torture, and was assured by our Justice Department that we were not torturing.
And you need to know they hate us because we love freedom.
Well, listen, we've never been stay the course, George.
And I think it's important in a time of war that to the extent possible we leave politics out of the major decisions being made.
However, we will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants.
and I proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse.
Said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11 that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down. It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Jose Padilla convicted of aiding Muslim extremists.
We are not safer as a result of this verdict.
A wild ride on Wall Street.
The sentiment that has been driving this market has been fear.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. After deliberating just a day and a half, a jury in Miami has found Jose Padilla and two co-defendants guilty of supporting Islamic extremists and plotting attacks overseas well before 9/11. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen was at the courthouse.
These jurors believe the government's narrative that these guys were acting and talking and walking like terrorists back in the 1990s, that Padilla in particular may have gone over to Afghanistan and trained in a terror camp, and that literally the trio were up to no good, that they were just too suspicious in their words and deeds to for it to have been a coincidence.
But Gene Baker, an attorney for Adham Amin Hassoun, says this case was about the Bush administration making a point.
The government was determined to get a result, to send a false message to the nation that we are safer. We are not safer as a result of this verdict.
Padilla, originally accused of plotting to set off a radioactive dirty bomb in this country, was held 3.5 years as an enemy combatant before being put on trial. The dirty bomb charge was put aside. Now this.
Can you guess where is Michelin Man? He's heading off-road to the daunting River of No Return. Fortunately, Michelin Man will return, because he has Michelin's new LTX AT2 tires, with class-leading off-road traction, plus exceptional on-road comfort for his trip home. For more on Michelin's new LTX AT2 tires, and to see where the River of No Return is, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Claim based on internal Michelin off-road evaluation versus competition. See website for details.
Hey Dave, Mike here. Hey, this afternoon at around 2:27, the plumbing's going to back up with a lot of grayish, goopy stuff. It'll all overflow onto the tile floor and make a nice little safety hazard. Cool? Anyway, just thought you should know.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added thousands of new plumbing products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. Valves, fittings, fixtures, toilets, water heaters, whatever it takes. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At one point, this looked like one of the worst days yet in the current stock market shakeout. The Dow plunged 342 points, but then it recovered, erasing almost all of those losses to close 15 points lower at 12,845. Stephen Purpura, who manages floor operations at the New York Stock Exchange for William O'Neill & Company, says the extent of the subprime mortgage problem remains unclear.
The big fear of this market is that some of the major financial institutions are going to have a very lasting problem with this, and the fact that they rallied sort of takes some of the pressure off that particular fear.
In the broader market, the S&P 500 actually ended the day 4 points higher. The remnants of Tropical Storm Aaron hit the Texas coast today, dumping up to 6 inches of rain in Houston. Tracy Evans of station KTRH was out in the weather.
Looks like nighttime. The sky is so dark. The rain is coming down in sheets. Parts of the city have already seen cars going underwater just trying to drive on roads. And we've even seen our light rail train having to shut down in the downtown area.
One person was killed when the roof of a grocery store collapsed. As bad as this was, Dean could be much worse. The big Atlantic storm became a Category 2 hurricane this afternoon. Hurricane warnings are posted for some islands in the eastern Caribbean. And projections are that Dean will continue to strengthen and head toward the Gulf of Mexico next week. The owners of a New Orleans nursing home where 35 people drowned during Hurricane Katrina are on trial now. Testimony got underway this afternoon. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick is there.
The jurors were shown photographs of some of the elderly victims. They showed no emotion as they glanced at them. Earlier in opening statements, a prosecutor said Sal and Mabel Mangano exercised bad judgment in not evacuating the patients. He insisted Katrina was predicted with as much certainty as we've ever seen. A defense lawyer, though, quickly put the government on trial, saying the Manganos weren't warned, as officials were, that there could be a 30-foot wall of water. The levees didn't hold, and the Manganos and their patients were caught up in what he called the worst man-made disaster in history. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, St. Francisville, Louisiana.
Authorities in Peru say more than 400 people are known dead after last night's powerful earthquake. Many were killed when their homes collapsed. This woman in Lima was in a building strong enough to survive.
We were like all together under the safe place. Everything was moving. It was very scary.
The U.S. government is providing an initial aid contribution of $100,000 to help meet emergency needs. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I'd never gone through commercial real estate experiences before, and there was a lot I did not understand.
I bring my knowledge, my background, and my experience to the table.
Our realtor was able to really hone in, and that's when we found our space.
Working with my realtor saved me a lot more than money. It saved me time. It saved me aggravation.
Work with a realtor, someone who knows the commercial real estate market and can guide you through the process. Every market's different. Call a realtor today.
Definitely a smart business decision to use the realtor.
Only realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Sears Book Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought four Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at 9:59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of four select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply. See store for details on offer and the Sears Price Match Plus policy.
An Army report out today says there.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
It's time for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show.
As I was walking over the highway, I saw above me and in the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for me. I roamed and rambled and followed my foot.
Every week we set aside an hour to catch up with Scott Dick. He is our contributor on military and veterans issues here at the PBC show. He served in the Marine Corps and then retired from the Army as a major. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Peter, and welcome home to our continental protected space.
Well, thank you. It is great to be back, and I'm starting to catch up on a lot of the things that I missed while I was unplugged over in Europe. And so to the extent that you need to fill in the blanks for me, feel free. Just step right forward at any moment, okay?
I'll do that.
I got a bunch of items to chat with you about. One that struck my interest is we learned only today that Donald Rumsfeld actually submitted his resignation to the White House the day before the election last fall, and they sat on it for 2 days and announced it the morning after the thumping, as Bush described, the outcome of those midterm elections. And many Republicans are really pissed about this because they're saying, well, look, if he actually resigned the day before the election, why didn't you announce it? And, you know, why didn't you force him out 2 weeks before the election? Arlen Specter whines that he would still be chair of the Judiciary Committee if they had made that move.
Well, Peter, the election, there's no honor among thieves, it applies here. And the fact that he, did that to the other Republicans should demonstrate to the entire party and actually to conservatives in America that this guy is, he's on his own rogue leash, but do whatever it takes.
Well, and I think that it's also interesting that it didn't come out until now, that they were able to keep this under wraps, for 8 months or 10 months since the actual events occurred.
And like his departing shot he took at Congress when he was gave his goodbye speech, where he just said that he's been misunderstood, and we are not smart enough as a nation or a people or as any, you know, human breathing human beings to understand this complicated war in Iraq. He also never mentioned, and I thought this is humorous, the word Iraq or war in his four-page resignation letter. That cracked me up.
Yeah.
As if the war had nothing to do with him leaving or his unpopularity as a non-elected political appointee, a crony of Bush. It just speaks volumes, and this is where you have to read between the lines, and I'm curious, I'd like to read that and see exactly what it is that he said to the president, why he was resigning.
Yeah. Now, while we're talking about Pentagon chiefs, an interesting profile earlier this week in the New York Times about the current Pentagon chief, Robert Gates, says that he's really been keeping his own views very close to the proverbial vest, and that in meetings he may ask pointed questions, but it sounds like he's really not offering his own perspective. He does talk about possible, you know, policy and strategic adjustments after the report from General Petraeus in mid-September. But it seems that he is kind of laying low. And do you read that as the potential for some kind of a dramatic policy shift in the fall if the report from Petraeus, for one reason or another, indicates that?
Well, what I find, Peter, is that it's actually a kind of leadership management style that I admire, because what he's not doing is signaling to his generals how he wants the report written. That's what Dunsfeld did. Every day he told them in no uncertain terms how he wanted the information, the intelligence, the after-action reviews reported to him. And therefore he could say, hey, this is coming from our generals. I think Gates, to his credit, is sort of not using command influence. Either he's so politically astute that he doesn't want to set himself up, or that he's actually exercising some leadership skills, and that has been absent from the Department of Defense for a long time.
The article says, in many ways, Gates is shaping up to be a pivotal figure in this debate. As an outsider who took over at the Pentagon only last December and who has admirers in both parties, he may be the one person with the clout to persuade either Bush or the Congress to compromise. He is also the administration official whose views are the least understood. Aides say Gates has been deliberately opaque, as befits a former intelligence official from who called his 1996 memoir From the Shadows. And since taking over from his more polarizing predecessor, Donald Rumsfeld, his goal has been to temper the debate by staying out of it as much as possible. Now, I understand your point as an administrator, but let me turn now to this report from the Los Angeles Times on the 15th of August. And it says, Petraeus' September report will be written by the White House. It says,
imagine that.
Despite Bush's repeated statements, the report will reflect evaluations by Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker. Administration officials said it would actually be written by the White House with inputs from officials throughout the government. And though Petraeus and Crocker will present their recommendations on Capitol Hill, legislation passed by Congress leaves it to the president to decide how to interpret the report's data. And they're now saying that Petraeus and Crocker will testify on the Hill, but before the report is released, not after.
That's very interesting. Once again, we have an overarching, exceptionally, I don't know how to put it, Peter, this command influence. He's going to leave it to the White House. The White House that creates its own reality is going to interpret the data coming out of Iraq. What a shock. Gates, you know, I have to hand it to him. He's cleaning up some dead wood. He's getting rid of that yes-man pace. He's doing some things that are, I mean, he really put the pedal to the metal on the MRAP, and that popped while you were gone. So I'm impressed so far that he's taken what was just a horrible bag of car repair parts, and he's starting to assemble it into some kind of five-wheeled vehicle. But it's taking shape versus what Rumsfeld is doing. No, I couldn't tell what his plan was other than to corporatize the military.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting view. I appreciate that.
So kudos to Gates as far as when I heard that he's actually listening instead of talking, that is like the first sign that there's some leadership going on in the DOD. And Peter, by the way, do you know the difference between the Boy Scouts and the Army?
No, I'm sure you'll tell me.
Well, the Boy Scouts have adult supervision.
This is from thinkprogress.org, covering the L.A. Times report that I just referenced. And they say the White House has repeatedly employed Petraeus as a PR flack, using him to promote failing Iraq policies and the War Czar nomination of General Doug Lute. President Bush had previously said he would respect the command structure and not intercede in the Petraeus report. Here's a quote. I repeat, as the commander-in-chief of a great military who has supported this military and will continue to support this military, not only with insisting that we get resources to them, but by respecting the command structure, I'm going to wait for David to come back, David Petraeus, to come back and give us the report on what he sees. And that was a verbatim quote. I know that the verbiage got a little complicated there, but that's how he actually said it.
Well, Peter, to me, that strikes me as being a pretty bald-faced lie, and since I'm not a print journalist, I can say that. Because I did not know until just yesterday that General King, K-E-A-N-E, retired. The guy that went up to the White House along with that American Enterprise Institute, flack, and sold the Surge. Did you know he was senior military advisor to Petraeus now?
I didn't know that.
And he's retired, and I wonder how, if Petraeus said, oh, Mr. President, could you send me a senior retired general who's also a White House flack and in the pocket of the American Enterprise Institute to be my senior military command advisor? So Keane is exercising that, and I think that's just that he's the leash holder for Petraeus.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Bush has successfully bought more time. And I think that the whole discussion of the Petraeus report in this mid-September timeline has been something that has permitted the administration to push off the immediate concerns. And unfortunately, the Democrats are the enablers in this kind of alcoholic problem. They went ahead and caved and passed on the supplemental budget, about $100 billion for Iraq, and they were unsuccessful in imposing any conditions at that time. They now say that they're going to try it again with the defense bill for the next fiscal year, but I'm not very optimistic that they'll have any real impact there.
No, it's domestic election politics. You know, support the troops means, stripping away our fundamental rights in the nation. Then I think some of these blue dog Democrats are going to get that done. And they're going to be reelected. And then what, Peter? They're going to live with the situation. And if we're so lucky as to not eat each other in this election cycle and elect a Democrat as president, then what we're going to be faced with this whole situation and as a Democrat, I'm not looking forward to it. A Democratic president and a Democratic Congress sorting out the problems of this new Iraq.
Very well put. We're going to take a break and return. Scott Dick is with us this entire hour. As I mentioned a little earlier, we've got some glitches in our telephone system. If you'd like to join the conversation, you got to call me during a break. That's when we can answer the phone because the gizmo that we use generally to answer the phone isn't working today. So if you call during the break, we can put you on hold and get to you in the next segment. The toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Give us a call right now, and we can include you in this chat with Scott Dick. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff, Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
It's fair time again, and this year we're homegrown at the Monterey County Fair. We're talking 6 big days of family-packed entertainment from Tuesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 19th. Stop by every day for free headline entertainment, including the Paul Thorne Band, War, Pam Tillis, Night Ranger, plus our homegrown band showcase featuring top local bands. Your entire family will love the free exhibits, including the Busy Bee Dogs and Hugo the One Man Band. You will love the Beer and Wine Pavilion featuring homegrown beers and wines. All this and much, much more just for $8 if you're an adult. Admission for 6 to 12 year olds is only $4, and kids under 6 get in for free. Kids Day is Tuesday, Seniors Day is Wednesday, and Military Appreciation Day is Thursday. From August 14th through August 19th, the fun will be at the 2007 Monterey Fair. Don't miss it. For information and to buy tickets, go online at www.montereycountyfair.com or call the fair office at 831-372-1000. That's 831-372-1000 for the homegrown Monterey County Fair.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hey everybody, let's take a look at the latest. Happy Thursday, almost there to the end of the week. Looking at traffic, we're looking at Gilroy Highway 25, 101. Apparently, there's a railroad crossing failure there. I'm going to translate that in English. It means that the arms are stuck in a down position with no train in sight. As a result, you can expect delays. King City Highway 198 at Main Street, solo spin out, partially blocking the roadway. If you are in the Rio Del Mar area, Seascape Boulevard at San Andreas, the right lane blocked. The reason? A stall vehicle. Santa Cruz Mountains, this is right near Bear Creek at Highway 17. Solo vehicle went down the embankment. Emergency crews actually have the westbound lane blocked and a possible injury, so heads up there, traffic is slow. Support brought to you by Sears Auto Center. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with the purchase of 4 select Goodyear tires. Now at Sears.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 22 minutes after the hour. We continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans issues. And Scott, a very bloody week in Iraq. More for civilians than for U.S. troops, although we lost a few. And there were coordinated attacks in the northwest portion of Iraq near the Syrian and Turkish borders. And the body count has exceeded 250, but they haven't unearthed all of the rubble. And this was a coordinated attack using 4 different truck bombs, and at least a couple of the trucks were fuel tanker trucks. And so these are not amateurs with, little M-80s and what we would purely call an improvised explosive device. This was a very calculating and a carefully orchestrated attack, and it has produced certainly a great deal of carnage.
Those are very disturbing, and this just tells us, Peter, that terrorists can strike anywhere, anytime, any place. We can have them pinned down, if you will. That's the expression that Bush likes to use in Iraq. And they'll go up into a safe area, which reasonably, you know, a safe area up on the Kurdish part. This isn't the Kurdish part, right?
Well, it's not in the Kurdistan area as we know it. This is in a more obscure area. And one of the villages is called Al-Aziz, and it's not too far from Talifar, which is a town that the Bush administration has used as a poster town of pacification and a kind of reunification. And there are members of a Kurdish-speaking religious sect called the Yazidis who are in this area, and the attacks seem to be focused on them. And you use the term terrorists, and so far there's no indication that this was related to al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia. They haven't taken credit for it or asserted that it was part of their offensive. And so to this point, I would have to suspect that either Sunni or Shiite activists were responsible for this attack on the Yazidi.
Yeah, it sounds like a land grab to me, that there's something there that they want, and they're just going to clear this terrain. It's much like what we saw in Bosnia, where you could go into villages and there would be nice house, completely built, fine, working, nice house, burned out shell. Nice house, nice house, nice house, burned out shell. Well, that's not random artillery fire or mortar fire or a gunfight. Those houses were targeted specifically because of the people who lived there.
And the New York Times describes it this way. The area has long been a focus of insurgent activity, prompting a major American-led offensive in 2005 intended to clear the area of insurgents. Last March, a twin truck bombing in Talifar killed 152 people. And just a month ago, about 155 died in a single enormous explosion in the northern town of Amerli. All three towns lie north of the main areas of the latest American offensives, supporting the notion that, as in numerous earlier operations, insurgent cells have flowed away from high troop concentrations or affiliated cells have been activated in areas unaffected by those offensives. And that's a real fancy way of talking about whack-a-mole.
Well, Pete, I think it's much more sinister than that. It has nothing to do with the United States or the American presence in Iraq. It has to do with the Iraqis settling their own scores, and what is tantamount out to a civil war. Oh, but don't see the C word in when we're talking about this, because it's not a civil war. It's a religious war. No, it's not a religious war. It's a war against American freedoms or something like that. Or do they even know what they're talking about, or what's the deal?
Well, what you just described is the litany of the various comments or descriptions of the situation that we've heard recently. And you're right. They don't all add up, and often one is contradictory of another.
So it makes no sense that somebody would just go up and randomly blow up some poor old Iraqis that they're neither supporting the U.S. nor the Turks nor the Kurds, although have they been working with the Americans against the Syrian incursions across the border, if they actually exist, and this punishment that the Syrians are, you know, taking out on the local area, who knows?
Yeah.
But that kind of death toll is amazingly high, and it just shows that it really has nothing to do with Americans and as many troops. We just went over 200,000 contractors, and as somebody very well pointed out, that is Bush's private army that he can do with what he wants, and that answers to no one.
On the NewsHour the other night, Juan Cole, who has been on our program many times, he's an outspoken professor at the University of Michigan, he was quoted as saying that the violence has not subsided. He says, you know, the number of Iraqis killed went up 25% in July over June. The number of troops killed in July was twice what it ordinarily has been in July. It depends on how you look at these numbers. There have been fewer big bombings. That's now not accurate. There still are big bombings, but there have been more people killed by snipers. So the violence hasn't subsided, and the guerrilla resistance in the Sunni Arab regions is still very powerful. And there's no sign of a political solution to this thing, which is the only real solution to this kind of guerrilla warfare. Scott, we're going to take a break and return in just a moment. I want to talk about what happened to some of the troops who were accused and have now been exonerated from their participation in the Haditha massacre. And there's much more to talk about as we continue to. If you'd like to join this conversation, we can take your call during the break. So get on the line now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. true, you're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Tourism Ireland. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com. I'm Charles Osgood. More than 1.4 million Americans will be diagnosed with cancer this year. 560,000 cancer victims will die. Everyone hopes that one of these days some discovery will be made that will either cure cancer or prevent it. Well, all that's well and good. There is medical progress being made, but a presidential panel on cancer is out today with a report that says we're not even taking proper advantage of the knowledge we already have.
With what we know already, we can actually decrease the incidence of cancer in this country.
More from Dr. LaSalle LaFall, head of the cancer panel, after this. I want to tell you about a place in Europe that's just waiting to be discovered where breathtaking natural wonders leave even a seasoned traveler like me speechless. Ancient castles where you can live like a king. Bustling cities where culture, fine dining, and vibrant nightlife meet. I'm talking about Ireland. Don't be surprised. In Ireland, not a day goes by without something new being discovered. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com or call 1-800-SHAMROCK for your free Ireland vacation planner.
Are you thinking about buying one of those inexpensive memory foam mattresses? Think again. Tempur-Pedic is the only mattress made from authentic Tempur material. The one that shapes and contours to your body, guaranteeing a restful, rejuvenating night's sleep. Those knockoffs don't even come close. Call Tempur-Pedic today at 1-800-805-3495, and they'll send you a free video, a sample of the proprietary Tempur material, and a 90-day trial certificate. You won't get that from those other guys. Tempur-Pedic is the real deal. Call 1-800-805-3495.
Several reports have shown that a third of all cancers in this country are caused by tobacco use, and another third by obesity and inactivity. So Dr. LaFall's panel says we don't have to wait for some breakthrough in cancer research to sharply reduce the terrible toll cancer takes.
Knowing what we know about the evils and the harmful effects of tobacco, and knowing the association of obesity and lack of physical activity and poor nutrition with cancer, we believe we can make a big dent and this increasing mortality that we are seeing.
The government can and should do more than it is doing, says the panel's report.
We can do things, certainly on tobacco, the federal excise tax and grant to Food and Drug Administration the power and funding to regulate tobacco. So many things can be done.
The report takes on the tobacco and food industries and tells the government to stop being a purveyor of unhealthy food. It also urges changes in public and private insurance policies.
We are asking the insurance companies to be involved because we think if they are involved and are aware of the savings that can occur, then they too will want to be a part of this.
If all these people, companies, and agencies ever could get together on this, it would be a miracle, as miraculous as any new breakthrough drug could ever be. The Osgood File, Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Scott Dick, our contributor on military issues.
Searching for life in the darkness.
Thank you, Abbas. Really appreciate that. As you may know, there have been numerous reports of atrocities in Iraq committed by American soldiers. You know about Ramadi, February 15th of 2006. Two members of the Pennsylvania National Guard shot an Iraqi man and then placed a rifle near his body to make it appear that he had attacked them. In Hamdaniya, in April of 2006, soldiers shot an Iraqi man, placed a shovel and rifle next to his body to make it appear that he had been digging a hole for a roadside bomb. In Mahmoudia, in March of 06, four Iraqis were killed, including a woman who may have been raped and a young girl. And there are other reports as well. And one of the biggest is a case from November of 2005 in the town of Haditha, northwest of Baghdad. And there were 24 Iraqis killed, including 15 women and children. And this is the incident you probably heard about. There was a roadside bomb that killed one American soldier in a 13-man squad, and other members, infuriated by it, raided several nearby households and killed most of the occupants. And, Scott, while I was away, I missed this. I'm only hearing after the fact that at least some of the soldiers who were defendants in the courts-martial were exonerated and dismissed from the case. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Well, actually, it was a result of the investigation by the general officer that was in charge of it, and he removed them from the prosecution.
I need a little more volume there, Scott.
Oh, sorry. So, I was talking quietly because, you know, you've been in Italy and you're sensitive to Latin America.
I see.
No, it's the Marine general who was investigating the case removed him, I guess, post-Article 32, and that's the sort of preliminary investigation that they do in the military as under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, removed a couple of those Marines from that case. And once they're removed from the case, they won't be prosecuted. So apparently there was something in the investigation that he saw that he didn't like. Now, that's possible, Peter, because normally when they start painting units with a brush, they paint in big, wide areas. And if you're in any of those spots, you are painted with everybody else, and they just start slapping charges against whomever they might, you know, reasonably stick, regardless if a person was actually involved in it or not.
Well, let me read a portion of this memo, and I want to thank our friend Carl in Eureka, who emailed me a copy of this. And this is a soldier named Sharat, who received a dismissal memo from the presiding officer. And it's just two paragraphs here. It says, an independent Article 32 investigating officer has considered all the facts and concluded that you acted in accordance with the rules of engagement. His comments on the evidence are contained in reference D. The intense examination into this incident and into your conduct has been necessary to maintain our discipline standards and, in the words of the Marines' hymn, to keep our honor clean. I recognize that you have been through a most difficult experience. I'm optimistic that you remained aware that you were and have always been entitled to and received the benefit of the presumption of innocence that is the bedrock of our military justice system. And finally, he wrote, you have served as a Marine infantryman in Iraq, where our nation is fighting a shadowy enemy who hides among the innocent people, does not comply with any aspect of the law of war, and routinely targets and intentionally draws fire toward civilians. As you well know, the challenges of this combat environment put extreme pressures on you and your fellow Marines. Operational, moral, and legal imperatives demand that we Marines stay true to our own standards and maintain compliance with the law of war in this morally bruising environment. With the dismissal of these charges, you may fairly conclude that you did your best to live up to the standards followed by U.S. fighting men throughout our many wars in the face of life-or-death decisions made by you in a matter of seconds in combat. And as you have always remained cloaked in the presumption of innocence with this dismissal, you may you remain in the eyes of the law and in my eyes, innocent. Signed, J.N. Mattis.
Wow, that is amazing. what that means parsed out in military jargon, in my opinion, Peter, is that this guy just got railroaded. That's as close. That is an amazing apology letter. At the same time, he was talking about morally bruising times. No, it's clear cut. The rules of engagement are there for a reason. And I don't think anybody would have conflict. Peter, if you and I were talking about a firefight between two police officers, between police officers and the bad guys, and somebody is injured or killed in that crossfire, there's an argument to be made that's in the line of duty. It's when they take people to the side of the road and put a bullet in their head, this when it they are not any longer acting under the color of law. So he's saying two things. He's saying, we screwed up, we railroaded you, and you're innocent, and keep your mouth shut. That was that last part, that long, rambling part about these morally bruising times and how we're better than the enemy. And why would he put that in a letter? That's completely unnecessary. That's commentary that's really telling the kid, hey, look, we screwed up, but keep it shut.
And let's identify the individual exonerated here, because after all, his name has been used in news stories where the implication was that he was quite guilty of these events. His name is Lance Corporal Justin L. Sharratt, S-H-A-R-R-A-T-T, of the United States Marine Corps.
And if this letter gives him, he will have to run around for the next 4 or 5 years saying, no, really, look at this letter. And they'll say, you know, we don't care. It's a technicality. No, no, really. Look, they actually said I was innocent.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a really hard road for him to rehabilitate himself. And this letter is an amazing, magnanimous piece of paper that I've never heard of or seen of. Normally, if the government does something and the military does something wrong, they just say, well, you know, it happens. Stuff happens.
Right.
And then you get to try to sort it out yourself, just like we're doing with our vets who are coming back with PTSD and being charged with the pre-existing conditions, blah, blah.
Right, yeah. Scott Dick with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, Scott, here's an item that was just published on Thursday this week, and it reads, Army soldiers committed suicide last year at the highest rate in 26 years. This is from the Associated Press, and more than a quarter did so while serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. The report is scheduled for release, and it found there were 99 confirmed suicides among active duty soldiers during 2006, and that's an increase of 11, up from 88 the year before, and it is the highest number since the 102 suicides in 1991 during the Persian Gulf War. I didn't realize there were so many during Desert Storm.
It's interesting. This is a statistic that nobody talks about. You really have to pull teeth to get it. It's sort of that weak underbelly. The military looks at it as it sort of these. Obviously, these individuals are somehow compromised in their mental integrity, and so they like to keep this under wraps. But if you look at the ranks, it goes from all the way from full bird colonel all the way down to private, men and women both. It doesn't matter what branch of the military they're in and whether they're in a combat service or combat job. So it's really horrible. And I was flying Space A in 2003 and talking to a group of Army nurses, male and female, that were coming back from Afghanistan. And they were reservists, and they were really disturbed by this. 12 people killed, soldiers committed suicide during their 6-month tour alone. And, of course, nobody was talking about it. Nobody was allowed to talk about it, and it certainly didn't make the paper or the media. So, I mean, this is a level of dissatisfaction, of depression, of severe mental trauma for people to take their own lives. And it's, it's just the tip of the iceberg. As far as I'm concerned, that is an indicator. And these soldiers and Marines have they have these teams, these stress teams. They have immediate opportunities to talk to psychiatrists and psychologists, and they have their peers and et cetera, and they're still suicide at this rate. It's an abomination, basically.
Now, of the 99 reported, 28 were deployed in Iraq or Afghanistan. 71 were not. Now, it doesn't say if they had previously served in the war zones. About twice as many women serving in Iraq and Afghanistan committed suicide as did women who were not deployed to the war zone. And the increase is partly blamed on failed personal relationships, legal and financial problems, the stress of their jobs, and multiple deployments.
Yeah, I'm not shocked. I felt the stress of long deployments And it's amazing, and we weren't even in combat. It's amazing what happens to your brain when you're doing, going through Groundhog Day. You're doing the same thing every day. And some of these young people who have never been prepared to face this kind of adversity ever, boot camp won't do it, advanced individual training won't do it. The only experience that can prepare you for washing your friends' remains out of the front of your armored vehicle is to do it. And then you have to live with it. And a lot of times, these kids get no opportunity to grieve. They just have to drive on. You hear that over all the time. Shake it off, drive on. Shake it off, drive, go into a memorial service, and then that's pretty much it. So I'm really not surprised. I'm surprised that about the lack of outrage, at least at the government level. That there, now, there could be some kind of, you know, program going on where the, you know, Gates is all over this. And this is the kind of thing that they might keep quiet. Mm-hmm. But I'm surprised that, you know, given the statistic, the government's not crowing about it, saying, hey, look, this is what we're doing for these people, because we know this is serious.
Right. One more stat from this AP story. The 99 suicides amounted to a rate of 17.3 per 100,000, and on that basis, it is the highest in the last 26 years. The average rate is about 12.3. So that is a significant 5% increase.
And, Peter, we are only getting the active duty side. Remember we mentioned the 200,000 private contractors in Iraq. I'm curious about that rate. And their death, I think they're at 1,000 now.
That's about right.
For the contractors?
Yeah.
So we're at over 4,000 deaths. We have 460,000 troops, if you will, in Iraq. And we still have car bombings like we had 2 days ago. And it's, you know, I don't know when it's going to stop. Maybe if we put 1 million contractors in there, then we'll be better off.
Right. 3,683 is the fatality count for American service members in Iraq to date. We're going to take a break and return with Scott Dick. There's room for your call. If you call during the break, we can get you on the line and get you past our failed gizmo here. Coming up next hour, Richard Weirich joins us here in our secret studio. He's authored a book called 100 Siberian Postcards. He adopted a child, actually two, in Siberia over the last few years and was in that part of Russia during some critical events of the past few years. So we're going to talk about adoption and about Russian politics with Richard Weirich coming up next hour right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Collins Show. I'm ready for more. We continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans matters, and William from Santa Cruz joins us. Welcome, William. You're on the air.
Thanks. Hi. Basically, on the topic of troop levels in Iraq, considering that there's 180,000 private contractors or mercenary troops in Iraq, isn't it, and I guess the troop levels of the U.S. forces are also 180,000, if I'm not mistaken? Or
well, I believe, you know, post-surge, the number was supposed to rise to about 160 active duty uniformed service members. And I think your number on the contractors is a little high. What I had heard is 100 to 120,000.
Oh, really?
But roughly a third of those are carrying weapons. So
okay.
Not all of those are armed mercenaries, as we would define that term.
Okay, so then, but the aggregate, in other words, would be around 200,000 troops in Iraq at this point, armed.
Yes.
Troops.
Yeah, I think that's a fair number.
So anyway, just it just seems to me that we should include in a discussion about troop levels in Iraq, they should be included.
We try to keep that number in mind. We do.
Okay. I'm not trying to lecture you.
I think it's a very important point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We have discussed this on many occasions because when Bremer left, he invoked an edict, one of his decrees, that essentially immunized the mercenaries from any accountability either to Iraqi courts or to the U.S. military system. That was changed, I'm told, in the supplemental defense appropriation from last fall. I think it passed in December.
Uh-huh.
And Larry Korb informed me that there was a clause in there that now subjects the military contractors in Iraq to the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Well, that makes sense. That's the way it should be, in my opinion.
Peter, I need to jump in here.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I think I saw a report a couple of days ago that said all contractors in Iraq are around 200,000.
Really?
Yes, and so for me, whether they're weapons carrying or not, those contractors are being used to replace one-on-one a job that would be done by a soldier. So I think whether they're service support troops or combat service support troops or actual combat troops that are being contracted for, they could fit under the moniker of mercenary because they're replacing uniform-wearing soldiers. So to me, we've got about 465,000 troops, allies and Americans together in Iraq, which is about what Shinseki said we would need, and we're still getting basically our tactical butts handed to us. We do
and
not that, have
that's up around the level in the Vietnam War, almost, getting up there.
Right. And so when we take 1,000 casualties, and also, Peter, the report was around 1,000 casualties for the contractor, so we can't just dismiss that. There's a memorial in Houston, Texas, at KBR, for the 45 or 50 of their employees that have been killed in Iraq. So when you add the 1,000 to the 3,000, what did you say they were, Peter? 3,765 American soldiers?
I've got the number here. The latest figure is 3,683.
So we're talking about basically almost 5,000 people killed in Iraq that are belong, if you will, to the U.S. government. They're either contracted by or they're... See, because soldiers are under contract as well. I don't want anybody to forget that. They're under temporary contracts. When you join the military, you're not in the military for life. It's not indentured servitude. You have a choice at 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 6 years, 9 years to get out. So they're under contract as well. And I would like to see us have more of this discussion about the 450,000 military-type people in Iraq, however you want to put it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a much more, that's a much better way of discussing it because that's the reality. It's not 160 or 140,000 American troops. It's over 400,000, and that's our commitment. That's what we're paying for. That's the $1 billion a week that we're spending right there.
Thank you very much, William.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call today. Scott, you wanted to talk about Move America Forward. This is the a group of right-wingers who originally got together to go to Crawford, Texas, and stage a counter-demonstration to Cindy Crawford's Camp Casey. And they continue to promote good news from Iraq, and you wanted to offer some comments about what they're up to.
Well, just like the single issue, any other single issue group, I don't care what they're left or right, these people are amazing. Of course, it's the KSFO talk show host. I forgot her name,
Melanie Morgan.
She's like a big proponent. Of course, Milken is involved in this. And it's basically, it's their conservative, their right-wing talking points. It's a nonpartisan lie, a non-political lie group. And they're doing a September 3rd to 15th Fight for Victory tour. And they expect to move thousands of people to support they build themselves as the nation's largest grassroots pro-troop organization, Move America Forward. It's just a shill for the Republican Party and basically the war effort. I don't know where they're getting their money, but I saw this guy, this retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Buzz Patterson, who just wrote a book called War Crimes, The Left's Campaign to Destroy Our Military and Lose the War on Terror. Once again, another person doesn't understand that terror is not a noun. It's a concept.
Yeah.
So they're making money off of people. They have a coffee and cookies for the troops where they solicit donations to buy prepackaged coffee and cookies and send it to our troops, which is the most nonsensical idea I've ever heard of. Our troops could give a hoot. So they're basically typical thumping patriotism. These colors don't run. It's a bunch of nonsense. But we're going to hear more from them because they're going to gather some steam, and I think they're going to be sort of a swift boat kind of organization by the time we get around to 2008.
Well, I pulled up their website, and on the homepage they have a fair and balanced poll. It says, do you support giving the surge a chance to succeed in Iraq? And 212 people representing 97% of the respondents answered, yes, I support the efforts of our troops in Iraq and hope they succeed. Only 6 people, or 3%, said, I think Harry Reid is correct. This war is lost.
Yeah, they have a lot of places where you can contribute. Amazingly, after Linda Chavez comes up and they're funneling, they have all these political action committees, and they're just funneling the money into their pockets and the pockets of their friends and family. So it just seems to me that this is a way for them to make a little cash, and it looks like they're supporting their troops. This does a real disservice to the families that buy into this, especially if they've lost a family member in Iraq or Afghanistan, because they have Gold Star parents to Iraq trip that they're contributing, raising money to send these. Now, Gold Star is different than Blue Star. Gold Star means somebody in uniform that was a member of the family has died. So I think they're taking real advantage of people who are in distress, including families.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. I've looked at this as I can only stomach it in very small amounts. And they have this thing on here where Buzz Patterson really spanked John Stoltz the other day on television. And I looked at the actual clip, and they have a link to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's far from a spanking. It's not even close to an admonition. It's a typical right-wing, just yell as much as you can, as much innuendo, as much crap as you can, and just blot out what the other guy's trying to say after you ask him a question, and you don't get the answer that you want.
Mm-hmm.
This is typical right-wing conversation.
Yeah. Well, Scott, it's been a fabulous hour. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
It's always a pleasure, Peter, anytime.
Scott Dick, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next, we're going to talk with the author of 100 Siberian Postcards. Richard Weirich will join us here in our secret studio. Log on to peterbcollins.com. Catch our archives and a picture of him.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m., listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, along with Ava, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105, Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
Tired? Tired of commuting an hour or more every day so you can make money for somebody else? Would you like to build a successful home-based business? Let Tanya Simmons show you how. Attend the CyberWise Opportunity Rally on Saturday, August 25th at 1:30 p.m. The CyberWise Opportunity Rally will be held at the Valley Center Bowl in Salinas. Call John Gaines at 831-229-2546 to reserve your place at the CyberWise Opportunity Rally. Call John Gaines now at 229-2546. That number again is 229-2546.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The strange case of Jose Padilla reached a climax today in Miami, where a federal jury convicted him and two co-defendants of aiding Islamic extremists and plotting attacks overseas. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr takes us back to the beginning in 2002.
Padilla, a U.S. citizen, was portrayed as an al-Qaeda terrorist planning to attack an American city with radiation-laced explosives. He was locked up in a military prison and labeled an enemy combatant for 3.5 years. To avoid a showdown in the Supreme Court, the government eventually moved Padilla into the criminal system. And now he's been convicted of conspiring to support terrorists. Charges far less serious than the dirty bomb allegations first leveled by the Bush administration.
The head of the ACLU in Florida says the Padilla trial undermines the administration's unfounded fear that terrorists cannot be tried in the criminal courts. No one seems to know how deeply the mortgage mess is affecting the country's financial institutions, and that uncertainty prompted another turbulent session on Wall Street. The Dow dropped 342 points, then recovered almost completely, closing just 15 points lower than yesterday. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason is following all this.
The Dow is actually still clinging to a slight gain for the year, but the S&P 500, which is a broader index of the market, 500 stocks as opposed to the Dow's 30 major stocks, well, it's now in the red. All of its gains for the year are gone.
The S&P did end the day with a four-point gain. The U.S. government is sending $100,000 in emergency aid to Peru, and officials say a Navy hospital ship in Ecuador could get there quickly if the Peruvian government asks for it. The confirmed death toll from last night's earthquake is well over 400 now. Many were crushed when buildings collapsed. Alice Cook is a teacher in Lima.
There was a church where they were holding mass, and the roof caved in. But because the freeway was all cracked and a whole bunch of boulders fell onto the freeway, the bomberos, the firemen, and the police are having a hard time getting there.
Communities outside Lima got the worst of it. Many have no power and no running water. At the Crandall Canyon mine in Utah, CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports on the effort to rescue six trapped men.
This very slow process continues. This is now the 10th day without any sign of resolution. Attempts to dig through the caved-in tunnel itself are continuing at a very slow pace. Rescue crews have also started to drill a fourth hole in an area where sophisticated listening devices picked up some mysterious sounds. It's expected to take 2 days to drill this fourth hole. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the command post in Huntington, Utah.
In Yellow Pine, Idaho, about three dozen people refused to evacuate as wildfires move closer. Among the holdouts is Susan Matlock.
I gave them my information to contact my daughters, but we still feel safer here, protecting our place also with our firefighters.
In Wyoming, a fire just outside Yellowstone Park threatens a lodge built by Buffalo Bill Cody in 1904. This is CBS News.
Sears Book, Chapter 9, Tires and Dads. It all began when Jill got her license. Her father looked at the family car's ball tires and panicked. He went straight to Sears Auto Center and bought four Goodyear tires at the lowest prices guaranteed. So when Jill safely rolls in at $9.59, he's glad he chose the best. This life chapter and the lowest prices on Goodyear tires can be found in the Sears Book. For a limited time, get a $20 or $40 Visa cash card with purchase of four select Goodyear tires. Sears, where it begins.
Rebate offer ends 8/25/07. Exclusions apply. See store for details on offer and the Sears Price Match Plus policy.
Want to get your business noticed? Maybe you need to stand out more. At the Office Depot Design Print and Ship Depot, you can print or engrave your logo on business cards, letterhead, and envelopes, and on thousands of promotional products, including apparel, pens, and more. And if you don't have a logo, Office Depot can help you create one. Help your business get noticed. Stop by Office Depot, and we'll show you how. Office Depot, taking care of business.
One of the Bush twins is engaged. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the story.
In a brief written statement, the First Lady's press secretary put out the word that the president's daughter, Jenna, is engaged to be married. Her intended is Henry Hager of Richmond, Virginia. He's the son of the state's former Lieutenant Governor John Hager, who now serves as chairman of the Virginia Republican Party. It raises the possibility of a White House wedding, though no date or other plans have been announced. The statement describes President and Mrs. Bush as happy about their daughter's plans. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the president in Crawford, Texas.
She wants to be treated as an adult, but she misses her toys. 16-year-old Wendy Wouche moved out of her parents' home in Oak Island, North Carolina, to marry a 40-year-old man. Brenton Wouche was her high school track coach. He resigned on the day of the wedding. Now, Wendy's suing her parents for the return of her PlayStation and her Beanie Babies. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Can you guess where is Michelin Man? He's heading off-road to the daunting River of No Return. Fortunately, Michelin Man will return, because he has Michelin's new LTX AT2 tires, with class-leading off-road traction, plus exceptional on-road comfort for his trip home. For more on Michelin's new LTX AT2 tires, and to see where the River of No Return is, visit MichelinMan.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Claim based on internal Michelin off-road evaluation versus competition. See website for details.
Hey, Dave. Mike here. Hey, this afternoon at around 2:27, the plumbing's going to back up with a lot of grayish, goopy stuff. It'll all overflow onto the tile floor and make a nice little safety hazard. Cool? Anyway, just thought you should know.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added thousands of new plumbing products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. Valves, fittings, fixtures, toilets, water heaters, whatever it takes. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to our third and final hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, originating in San Francisco. Our music of the moment is from Golden Earring. This hour, I'm joined by Richard Weirich. He is an attorney who works on environmental cases. He's a writer, and his new book is called 100 Siberian Postcards. Richard Weirich has received the Patrick Hopkins Prize, been a nominee for the Pushcart Prize, and he is a co-founding editor, along with Shezla Milosh, I hope I said that right, of the literary journal Transformation, which he continues to edit. And he adopted a child, or actually two children, right? From
One.
One,
yes.
Okay.
Already had two children and adopted a daughter in 2005 in Siberia.
In Siberia. And what prompted you, if you decided to adopt a child from somewhere in the world, to pick Siberia, Rick?
Siberia was a bit of an accident. We wanted to adopt in Russia, which was one of the last places you could get a child out of Europe or Asia, not counting China, which mm-hmm. still is a big adoption market. A lot of the former Soviet republics, Kazakhstan, Georgia, Moldova, had shut down because of trafficking. And so the Russian Federation was really kind of the only game in town, which was fine. My wife, Deborah, is of Russian ancestry. I've always been a Russophile. And the adoption market really was robust back then. It has since tightened dramatically and is in danger of vanishing.
Mm-hmm. But,
and then to answer the second part of your question, it was just sort of an accident that the little girl we chose was in Siberia, mm-hmm. South Central Siberia, in a little wedge of land between in the Altai Mountains between Kazakhstan and Mongolia.
I see. And it's just curious to me that you use the terminology about the adoption market. You know, that strikes me as the way they view it.
Yeah. It is a kind of a cold characterization.
But I mean, it almost reduces your daughter to a product.
Yes, there's been a lot of writing about that, mm-hmm. and it is in all stages of the game. It's unfortunately there are those extremely commercial aspects to it, especially now with the Russian overlay. You know, the mafia really controls all elements of the economy, not just oil and gas that you read about in the front pages of the paper, but the Ministry of Education and the adoption system.
Mm-hmm.
Too. So a little bit of money goes to them.
Well, how did you navigate that? Did you go to the ATM and pull out a billion rubles? And
no, you actually you go to an American agency that vets you under the state law you're working under. In our case, mm-hmm. you know, it was in California. And
and exactly what is that process? Do you have to cough? And
What you do is they make sure you're not dangerous, you're not a bad parent to whatever kids you have. They do a background check, criminal check, FBI check. So you're vetted under state family law statutes, and then you are, once you pass that, which anybody adopting anywhere in the country would do domestically, you are handed off to a international agency that's still located in the U.S. that specializes in Russia. Ours was in Boca Raton, Florida, of all places, a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hand you off, after a further vetting process, to the Russian Ministry of Education, and then you're at the mercy of the Russian bureaucracy.
And who did you have to grease along the way? Not the people in Boca Raton, but I imagine when you got to Siberia.
You know, it's to be fair, the greasing was minuscule, and it was you could actually see it on the invoices from the Russian agency, and it was in very broken, badly translated English, saying something to the effect that, like, you know, fees likely for the bribery of the things like that. You know, so.
Real discreet.
Yes, it was. It's unavoidable. But
and
it's
are we
not,
talking
it's not
small
large,
amounts of money?
It's well. Given the ultimate cost of the adoption, it was quite a small amount of money.
Uh-huh. And what was that ultimate cost?
North of $45,000.
Really?
I would say. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is you know, travel, and a lot of it is being, you have to make several trips, two trips. And then we got caught in a situation that was quite interesting and was very much bound up with the terrorism and Chechen issues that were going on at the time in 2003 through 2005, where we, along with other couples, were kind of, well, we didn't get moored like a lot of them did, and like you read about in the news. We, between the first trip where we chose her in the orphanage down in Novokuznetsk, and the second trip, Putin responded to a anti-American contingent in the Duma that was crying out about Westerners, mainly Americans and Irish, coming and looting the country of their infants.
The Duma, the lower house.
The lower house of the Congress. Well,
yeah.
The parliament. And Putin had to throw them a bone. Of course, there's half a million orphans from age or children in orphanages from ages 0 to 18. The highest demand orphans are the infants, and there are a lot of a few girls available. So what happened is that he, in response to that pressure, he took the high-demand adoptee infants and put them back on a database to give Russian couples, Russian fertile couples, a first crack at them. And, mm-hmm. of course, none of them came forward because they're giving their babies up in droves. And so that could end up in a delay for some couples. I mean, some couples would go clear out into the Far East to Khabarovsk, Vladivostok, Birobidzhan, and, you know, come back to the States, come back for their pickup trip, their
right.
second trip, and be told that they had to wait another couple months in these expensive oil cities where, you know, the hotels are very, very expensive. So as far as I know, every Westerner got their baby. It wasn't mm-hmm. one of these situations you read about in Cambodia and Southeast Asia where the trafficking, where the infants were really taken away from the mothers and had to be given back or you never got your baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that this Putin kind of kowtowing to the the anti-American element of the Duma led to somewhat of a delay. It led to a lot of anxiety, my wife especially, because she had really fallen in love with Amelia when we first met her, as had I, and we were afraid that she would be attractive, darling baby she was, that she would be one of the few that might get snapped up by a Russian couple.
Yeah. We're talking with Richard Weyrich. His new book is called 100 Siberian Postcards, and there are 100 entries in the book. No stamps are shown here or, you know.
No, but I...
for philatelists, what are you going to do?
Macmillan, the publisher, made postcards as part of the, you know, the press kit, and they're really beautiful things. They're done by Peter Bergel, and who designed the cover, and they're they meet with postal regulations in the U.S. and in the Russian Federation. So they're beautiful little postcards.
Sure, I'd love to collect one. I picked chapter 13 here, postcard 13, called Plague. The Siberian summer insects are pestilential. Mosquitoes grow large as hummingbirds, and hornets drift like sparrows from hive to hive. They are begotten, born, and die like Yeats' beasts, their husks dropping into the rapids of the Ob, a river, to become a foaming blanket of confetti. Driving along its banks in a jeep, a wasp will shoot into the side of your face and die, its stinger undeployed. Cars and passengers' faces run with blood and searching handkerchiefs. The headlights and grills are caked with wings, antennae, giant eyes as black and slick as olives. But they are seen as the reverse of the biblical locust, for many a prisoner or lost traveler has eaten the paste and juices of these creatures' bodies. They can be easily caught by hand. They are so heavy and slow. They lift up out of rotting trunks and hover, moving only inches at a time, as if gazing at their human captors. There's a Kasbas myth, a variation on the wicked stepmother theme, in which a baby is abducted by a runaway husband's mistress who takes the form of a furry Luna moth. Her wings are green blankets folded around the infant's neck. She cradles it under her as she glides on the taiga breeze, feeding it spruce bark and pine nut crumbs, the syrups of maples. When the mother finds the baby, she is sprinkled with green yarn, green flakes, green tufts of iridescent dust. In later life, she becomes an acrobat, earthless and lithe, and the taint of the color can still be seen as she twists and unfolds her limbs between trapezes. That's really beautiful.
Thank you. It makes you want to sign up for summer in Siberia.
Makes me want to go get a can of Raid and some mosquito netting.
We were never there. We were always there in the dead of winter. We were never there in the summer. But it is the insects, in fact, in Solzhenitsyn and Mandelstam's memoirs, one of the worst things about the camps was being outside. They actually liked to be back in the barracks and cells because of the insects.
Yeah. So... the purpose of the book, are these little snapshots for your daughter? You expect her to read this in a few years and understand the experience of finding her and bringing her here?
That's one of its purposes. It's you know, it basically falls into three sections. The first section deals with the arrival and sort of the meaning of arrivals and coming into a strange place. The second part really establishes a sort of tone and setting for the land east of the Urals, where Siberia proper starts, and some of the bureaucracy, having to deal with the last bits of bureaucracy before you head into the actual orphanage visiting process. And then the third section is pretty much confined to the orphanage and what went on there. Mm-hmm. But in many ways, it's a Russian commonplace book with a lot of scenes of wildlife, and because it's a gorgeous alpine wilderness. I've never been to Alaska or the Yukon, but I imagine it's similar to that, but 5-6 times as large, and a lot of it's still unexplored. A lot of people have this vision of it, I think, from Cold War years as entirely above the Arctic Circle, entirely frozen. But much of it is temperate. Much of it has four seasons, a very long winter.
So we'll pick up there as we continue. Richard Weyrich, W-I-R-I-C-K, is the author of this new book, 100 Siberian Postcards. It's out from Telegram Books. We'll take a break and return right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listen to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
It's fair time again, and this year we're homegrown at the Monterey County Fair. We're talking 6 big days of family-packed entertainment from Tuesday, August 14th through Sunday, August 19th. Stop by every day for free headline entertainment, including the Paul Thorne Band, War, Pam Tillis, Night Ranger, plus our homegrown band showcase featuring top local bands. Your entire family will love the free exhibits, including the Busy Bee Dogs and Hugo the One Man Band. You will love the Beer and Wine Pavilion featuring homegrown beers and wines. All this and much, much more just for $8. If you're an adult, admission for 6 to 12-year-olds is only $4, and kids under 6 get in for free. Kids' Day is Tuesday, Seniors' Day is Wednesday, and Military Appreciation Day is Thursday. From August 14th through August 19th, the fun will be at the 2007 Monterey Fair. Don't miss it. For information and to buy tickets, go online at www.montereycountyfair.com or call the fair office at 831-372-1000. That's 831-372-1000 for the homegrown Monterey County Fair.
Hi, this is Paul.
And Cynthia.
Of the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden. And we'd like to thank you for supporting this locally owned and operated Carmel business for nearly 40 years.
Nestled in Carmel by the Sea, the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden occupy a beautiful space on Dolores between 5th and 6th, showcasing an array of books on local interest, new releases, bestsellers, novels, children's, metaphysical, and much more. Plus, you'll enjoy taking a good look at our music, healing tools, cards, statuary, fountains, and more.
Proud to be a part of the Carmel business community, we invite you to see us soon.
Pilgrim's Way offers one-on-one intuitive counseling in the bookstore. You may call ahead for an appointment or just walk in. Whether you're a local resident or a visitor to our beautiful peninsula, we have something for everyone.
The Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, between 5th and 6th on Dolores.
Discover an imaginative adventure. Pick up a good read at the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel.
And good afternoon, or good evening, I should say. Let's take a look at the very latest. Let's start off with a problem being reported right now. It is in Gilroy, Bloomfield Avenue, Balsa Road. What's going on there? The railroad arms are stuck. They're in the down position. Apparently, there's no train in sight. We reported that some time ago. You can continue to expect delays in the area. In Carmel, we're looking at Highway 1 at Rio Road, an injury crash, 3 vehicles. We have a fire department and paramedic crews on scene along with CHP. They should be present. Pajaro, Salinas Road, Jonathan, we have a 2-car crash reportedly blocking lanes. CHP on the way to the scene there. Also Monterey, southbound 1 before Highway 68, injury crash, 2 vehicles on the right shoulder. Emergency crews are on scene. In Felton, Zayton Road at Graham Hill, injury crash, a tree fell onto a car. The entire roadway is shut down. This report brought to you by Pep Boys.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. Richard Wyrick is my guest. He's a Los Angeles-based attorney who primarily works on litigation related to environmental issues. And he and his wife adopted a baby from Russia, from Siberia. And she's now about 6 years old?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, she celebrated her third birthday on July 19th, if we can rely on the Russian hospital records.
Uh-huh. And, Rick, during the break, I got old-fashioned here, and instead of going online to Google Maps or something like that, I pulled out my Rand McNally Cosmopolitan World Atlas, and you can see how old this is because there's a sticker on the front, latest Soviet changes.
It's not bad. It's better than probably most. A lot of people still have Soviet maps.
Open it up, and it still shows the USSR as the name of the nation.
And the Baltics are in there and as part of Russia, yeah.
Right. But you were deep in the heart of Siberia. You pointed out some of the towns here. And some of them defy my pronunciation. Do you speak Russian?
I very poorly.
Yeah.
Sort of a timber camp Russian.
Yeah.
Enough to get by. And I was actually...
Enough Peruski to order borscht?
Yes. I was being tutored by the Russian au pair we had. And one of the many reasons we were sorry to lose her is that I lost my tutor.
I see. Okay. So describe a couple of these towns that you told me about during the break for the benefit of our listeners and the journey that you took to find and retrieve your adopted daughter.
The area that she's from is in Kemerovo Oblast. Oblast means republic, and these republics were established really after the fall of the Soviet Union in the Union of Independent Republics. And the Kemerovo is where you fly to. It's kind of a dull industrial town. And then you drive down to her birth city, Novokuznetsk, which is quite a historical city. It's surrounded by beautiful old 16th and 17th century towns. Novosibirsk is sort of the capital, New Siberia, the capital of Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a little Moscow. It's, you know, Putin has been giving all these incentives to second and third generation Siberians to come back to European Russia, and they've declined because they've built quite a beautiful city there.
And what are the industries? Because it used to be based on prisons, right?
There was the penal industry, but much of it is mining, much of it is coal mining. The area that she's from is called the Kazbas, which means mining, coal mining primarily, copper, bauxite. And But a lot of Russian economy was based in Siberia around Novosibirsk and a town called Akademogorsk, which is the academy, and it's where a lot of defense and space sector people were trained. Russia as a whole is a marvelously literate and well-educated society, but in Siberia that's particularly the case, because when you think about it, the people who were exiled out to the prison system were all intellectuals, writers, linguists, anthropologists. Then you had a lot of the engineers were sent out there to work in defense, and then you had a lot of the space sector people, even though the space launch place, their Cape Canaveral, as it were, is down in Kazakhstan.
Mm-hmm. And what about nukes? Is there a nuclear industry?
That's farther north, up near Yekaterinburg, north and west. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think Langwish has just written the book, The Nuclear Bazaar, about how he's worried about a lot of the polonium might be able to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, fishing and timber and those kind of Arctic industries are very big there. But a lot of it is defense and space. In fact, she was born very near the town where Francis Gary Powers, which I even can remember when I was 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, they named a rock band after him, U2.
She was right near where he was shot down. I think the CIA story was that he was just taking a kind of a glider flight around Turkey and fell asleep and then ended about 1,200 miles east and got shot down. And then they blamed him for not killing himself on the way down.
Right, yeah. He didn't chew the capsule.
He didn't chew the capsule, or there was a spancheral he was supposed to stick himself with. But these towns are very, very beautiful.
Richard Weirich is with us, 100 Siberian Postcards, as we continue. I want to get his views on some of the things that have been happening in Russia, including while he was there, Putin, the Chechen challenge, and other issues, too. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for a great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-488 888 for carryout to die for.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero. Putting the service back in service stations.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Fly me to the moon.
This Saturday, 11 a.m., KRXA 540, a UFO special. Monterey Bay UFO sightings hosted by Bob Oliver and special guest speakers of the 9th annual Bay Area UFO Expo. Expo celebrities include George Norrie, Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., whose father examined UFO debris from the Roswell crash, actor-activist Gary Busey, researchers Jordan Maxwell, Hilly Rose, Sean David Morton. Subjects include implants, time travel, ET encounters, Tesla technologies, Earth mysteries, and more. Pacific Grove police sighted a UFO at Asilomar. Could one out of 10 of us have witnessed a UFO? Tell us what you remember. Saturday, 11 a.m. to noon, UFO sightings over the Monterey Bay on Talk Radio, KRXA 540.
I love you.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo. And so much space.
We like to have a little compassion for our listeners who just suffered through 4 minutes of commercials.
Yeah, out there, without care. Yeah, I was out of touch.
Get a little gnarls break here.
I just knew too much.
Conference, my guest is Richard Weirich. He is the co-founder and editor of the journal Transformation, also an attorney in his spare time. And he and his wife traveled to Siberia to adopt a baby girl a few years ago. And he was impelled to write 100 Siberian postcards, as he described. It helps relate his experiences and what he saw and observed. And you also worked as a journalist and posted dispatches from Russia at the time you were there. Is that right, Rick?
Right. It was an interesting time to be there. It was between the Beslan school massacre, which had really caught a lot of... It seems that with a lot of Chechen news, even though... It's one of those areas, like a lot of Africa and some of the third world, that people don't pay that much attention to until there's something absolutely horrific.
Right.
And the Nordest theater seizure by Chechens had taken place in, I think that was December of 2002. And then when we began going in 2004, the Beslan school massacre that was engineered by Basayov had just taken place, so it was particularly hard to travel out where we wanted to go.
And
there's a lot to write about.
from here, the whole issue with the Chechens is really hard to parse.
It's very hard for it, yeah.
And clearly there is a challenge to Moscow's authority and Putin in particular presented. And it appears that the way George W. Bush played hardball in response to 9/11, taking the gloves off and really embracing Soviet-era tactics here in the United States,
right,
and against our presumed enemies, that this gave Putin tacit permission to take the gloves off and play, you know, really tough defense with the Chechens, and not get any real disapproval from the U.S. Or the world community in general.
I think it's a very fair comparison on many levels, because it wasn't just a big events like 9/11 and the Beslan school massacre. It was events back during the first Chechen War. Since there wasn't much of value that we saw, since a lot of Chechnya and the Caucasus is west of the Baku oil fields, which is really all I think we care about. Even in the first Chechen War in 94 and 95, when Yeltsin was pounding away and destroying Grozny, actually Clinton, I'm a big fan of Clinton's, but I mean Clinton kind of turned the other cheek and didn't make that much. He didn't draw any much attention to the human rights abuses that were going on then. But once Putin got in 99, at the advent of the Second Chechen War, yeah, he was able to use the first stages of that war, and then later the theater siege in Moscow and the Beslan school massacre to not only pound Grozny into rubble in the Second Chechen War, but also, you know, suspend the autonomy of the oblast governors and really take complete autocratic control of the country.
But
he's incredibly popular now, because not just because of such strong anti-Chechen feeling among many European Russians, but now because many of the oligarchs who were once in bed with him and who have not paid their taxes for years are being finally the change is being shaken out of their pockets, and he's filling the coffers with that tax money.
Give us a baseline, if you will. Do the Chechen rebels have a legitimate set of beefs against Moscow, or are they simply separatists who have to be dealt with Moscow's iron fist?
I think... really both. I mean, they're an ancient people that their enmity toward Russia, they simply want to be independent, and that goes back, you know, to the time of the mid 19th century or before, Pugachev's rebellion. It goes back to Tolstoy was a young lieutenant fighting the Chechens, but I think people like Politkovskaya, the journalist who was killed last year and whose Russian diary I'd like to talk about a little bit, she points out how they were there was some reconciliation offered by Dudayev, the first president of Chechnya, after the between the two Chechen wars, but it was rejected. At that time, Yeltsin was rolling forward, and one of his platforms was that all Chechens are bandits. All of them are thieves, mountain brigands, and they really have nothing to offer the country. And, you know, they didn't take that position with Georgia, with Moldova, and a lot of other countries. And I think a lot of it's really just rank racism. It's very race-based.
Because the Chechens are Muslims.
Well, they're Muslims. And they're dark-skinned, and many of them are. But they're not so much. Few of the Chechen movements are, I guess, what Thomas Friedman would call Islamo-fascist. They're not extreme. They're fairly secular. Dudayev and a lot of the people that followed him were Maskhadov. Were fairly secular Muslims. I mean, when opportunity permits, they'll sort of jump in an Islamic camp. But they are not Islamic fundamentalists. They're very very pretty much secular leaders. And in fact, one of the Kadyrovs who followed Dudayev out of power when Dudayev was assassinated by the FSB, the new KGB.
Right.
They tried to broker a peace with Moscow and tried to unite the fundamentalist Islam Chechens with the more secular ones, and that resulted in the father Kadyrov's death. And now Ramzan runs a militia group, and so it's a very difficult question to answer. The factionalism there makes the factionalism of, frankly, of the Middle East, to me, quite simple, quite black and white. It's really, really complex.
We're talking with Richard Rick Weirich here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The book we're describing is 100 Siberian Postcards. And you wanted to share something with us from Politkovskaya. That's a lot of syllables.
It is.
The Russian Diary. And this is the woman, she fell out of her building, isn't that right?
She was on her way back from the grocery store and was shot at point-blank range with a Makarov pistol. I think a lot of people try to trace it to the Kremlin. A lot of people try to trace it to Kadyrov, who is a formidable leader in Chechnya that she had accused of staging some of the Russian raids on Grozny, and a lot of people think that he had a beef against her, and that it seems like Putin and the Kremlin prefers poison to their enemies, and actually her assassination was much more in the style of something that Kadyrov and his people would do. But she was amazing. She not only was a prominent journalist, some of her writing's a little over the top for me. It's a little overwritten and it's a little didactic. It's kind of like some of the worst of Solzhenitsyn in the middle of the Gulag Archipelago, where he's sort of just ranting.
Yeah, he lost me there in the middle.
Yeah. but she also was an enormous ambassador. I mean, she was enlisted. She was so respected, especially during the Beslan school siege, that she was Putin gave her a plane to fly her down to north of Shecha to help in the negotiations. Interestingly, a tea that she was served on the plane, this may remind you of some recent events in London, was poisoned, and she, by the time she arrived to help with the siege, she was nearly dead in a hospital. She's since recovered from that.
Uh-huh.
But her
so it wasn't polonium, must have been something else.
It's sad because she chronicled so much of this, and then I think she just was too much of a strain on someone, either Putin or Kadyrov, and eventually met her end last October.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to add about her?
That's about it. I would highly recommend her three books on Chechnya. One is called A Small Corner of Hell, Dispatches from Chechnya, and from the Second Chechen War. And then her new book is called A Russian Diary, and it's especially interesting to me because it tracks the time that we were there from the fall of 2003 when the Second Chechen War was in full force to the summer of 2005 when Putin was reelected. She shows very, quite brilliantly, I think, about how Putin has co-opted nearly all sections of the country, including the press, and how people like her were very few and far between.
That's what I want to ask you about next, is did the press line up for Putin out of fear? Was it because, you know, certain media outlets were shut down and the message was clearly sent? Was it the murders of people like this reporter? What exactly has chilled the media? It was never really robust or free, but it seems to be almost back to the Soviet era.
Yeah, I'm going to answer it with, put on my lawyer hat and answer it and say all three, really. But I think a lot of it is simply fear. Because, you know, they know that Putin is a, you know, he was a lieutenant colonel in the KGB out of Petersburg, and he's strengthened the FSB. And he kind of he appeals to that part of the Russian character that Chekhov talked about. Is that there's something that we fear in freedom, and there's something we love in an iron fist and in autocracy. And people were very outraged about the first Chechen War, especially because of it seemed to be just a recap of Afghanistan. Their sons were coming back in body bags, and it was very, very unpopular. But Yeltsin, you know, turned it into a, you know, kind of a holy war against these people, and it co-opted everyone. In fact, after Dudayev was killed, you know, he was a former brilliant general against the Afghanistan occupation, and he, when he was killed, Yeltsin got Dudayev's widow to come on 2 or 3 months before his second election president in the summer of '96, and got her to endorse him in exchange for flying her away to some Islamic country somewhere.
Wow.
So the co-opting is very, very, very powerful. I think one of the reasons that Putin is so popular, again, is he's putting the oligarchs in jail. He's collecting the tax money. He's, you know, keeping the borders firm. He's keeping the Chechens, as it were, in line. And he's riding a healthy economy. I think that.
And he's less of a toady to George W. Bush than Tony Blair.
Yes, it is. Once the oil and gas prices go down and they're not, you know, their pockets aren't lined with all this gas money, and I think his predecessor's reputation will diminish.
We're going to take a break and return with Richard Weirich. Again, the new book is 100 Siberian Postcards. It's out from Telegram Books and should be at your local independent bookstore. Check there first. We'll take a break and return in a moment. If you'd like to call in and talk with us, we can take your call during the break. We're going to get this thing fixed by tomorrow. But for now, call during the break, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I found a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
And taking a look at traffic, last traffic report of the night, so let's see what's going on. Santa Clara, South 101 after Santa Tomas Expressway, crash right shoulder, Gilroy, Bloomfield Avenue, Bolsa Road, the railroad arm still stuck in a down position, no train in sight there, don't know what's happening, they're trying to work on that. Felton, looks like Zante Road at Graham Hill, injury crash, a tree fell onto a car. The entire roadway remained shut down. In fact, emergency crews were on scene trying to get that tree out of the roadway. Monterey, northbound 1 before Munras, we have a car and an ambulance possibly involved in a crash. In fact, it is involved in the crash. It's on the right shoulder, and don't know if injuries are reported there, but both those vehicles there along with CHP. The support brought to you by the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalks. Pepsi presents free Friday nights at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk this Friday. See the Dog Night. That's three Dog Night shows at 6:30 and 8:30.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. My guest is Richard Wyrick, W-I-R-I-C-K, if you plan to Google him. He is an attorney. He also is a writer and editor and the author of this new book called 100 Siberian Postcards, inspired by his wife and his adoption of a Siberian baby who's now 3 years old. She's healthy and well here in the U.S.?
Yes, she has Sibirsko Strovia, as they say, Siberian health, the envy of all Russians. You know, she doesn't get the kind of ear infections that most toddlers get, and she goes out without a coat when she should. Shouldn't.
Uh-huh.
I remember one of the big things of taking her out of the orphanage was they really inspect the snowsuit that you take her out into the world for the first time in. And so my wife kind of went whole hog and got a Ralph Lauren, you know, $200 with a big polo emblem, which the Nova Kuznetskans had never really seen. And she looked like the Michelin Man. She's very cool.
Rick, before the break, you referred to the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. And I imagine that Putin takes some twisted relish in seeing Bush bogged down in both Iraq and Afghanistan, winning in really neither case. And Afghanistan, we don't talk that much about. But, you know, the media spin in the U.S. is that we already won that war and then moved on to Iraq. But the Taliban has resurged. The poppy crops are back at before pre-invasion levels. Hamid Karzai is a glorified mayor of Kabul, the capital. And we certainly do not have the country under control, and neither have we captured Osama bin Laden, who we think is hiding in the border areas there between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And I dug into the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Music Archives here because I wanted to treat you to a spin of this disc. This is a British band called The Stranglers, and in the 1980s they produced a number of B-sides that were tweaking the Soviet Union over its failed occupation of Afghanistan. And they have a mythical character, a soldier named Vladimir, who goes to Afghanistan and falls in love with a camel and gets hooked on hashish. And let's just listen to a bit of this to give you a flavor of it.
Greatest socialist democracy
could one hope to be forgiven for losing temporary sight of the aims and goals of the Marxist-Leninist revolution? 2 years it took me to be cured of my illness. Being still a relatively young and fit man, I was still in search of fulfillment. The memory of Olga, Sergei, and my 2 children motivated me to seek an occupation that would both repay my debt to my great party and obviously help the way to international socialism. I was still unable to resume my lectureship in subnuclear particle physics and therefore volunteered to help our Afghan comrades in that great struggle for liberation.
So he wanted to help the Afghan comrades in the struggle for liberation. It's a little hard to hear the lyrics. They turned the music up too loud there.
That was brilliant. I like that. It's funny you mentioned the poppy fields, too, because, you know, Afghanistan's dirty little gift to the Russians now is it's still on the opium route that goes right up into Irkutsk by Lake Baikal, which is slightly I write about it in the book. It's slightly east of my daughter's birth city. And the AIDS epidemics, not sexual transmission, but shared needles.
Uh-huh.
There's an enormous AIDS epidemic in Russia now. They're comparing it to Africa's.
Really?
Yeah, it's huge. It's
and
huge.
Is it acknowledged or is it, pretty well obscured?
It's obscured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very real. Irkutsk is this junkie city, essentially, which is sad. It's a very pretty place.
Do they have needle exchange?
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that's progressive. Yeah. So Vladimir Putin, what's his future? He is termed out, and unless he pulls a Hugo Chavez and extends his term for life, will he actually give up the reins of government?
I think he will.
Yeah.
But his foreign minister, whose name escapes me now, is going to be, I think, pretty much of a replica.
Mm-hmm. Another KGB guy?
I don't think he's KGB. I think he was in media, like a lot of the oligarchs that he locked up. But I think his successor will continue to bask in Putin's popularity. I don't think he'll give any more autonomy back to the oblast governors. I think he'll back off of the Chechens somewhat. It's not as ferocious a war right now. But as long as the economy stays good, I think he has a fair chance of making.
Well, it's fascinating, and you have planted a foot there in another part of the world. And as your daughter grows up, I imagine you'll want to return and try to follow the developments there, and at least to some extent keep her in touch with her her fatherland.
That's what we tried to do by having the Russian au pair. We were really sorry to lose her. She went back to Tatarstan, and we want to get another. Russian au pair who can start teaching her the language right at the time when it's best to learn a language, you know, 4, 5, 6, when the mind is just sort of a sponge.
Right, yeah. Odin, Dva, that's as far as I can go.
Odin, Dva, 3, yes. She knows a few. She knows like bunny and elephant and those words. She knows animal words.
Yeah. Well, Rick, it's a pleasure to meet you. Is there a website for the book that we can direct people to, or for transformation?
Telegram. Yeah. Well, not for transformation, but Telegram.
Books.com.
Yeah.
Okay. And transformation, does it have a website?
We do not have a website. We're all print, not online at all. But I encourage people to subscribe.
Okay. And they can log on.
They can
call a toll-free number of their blow-in cards?
It's 1502 Abrams Parkway in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
75214.
Great. Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
The book is 100 Siberian Postcards. Rick Weirich has been our guest. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Peter B. Collins. And Roy and Trigger here to help me ride off into the sunset. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations, for another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The sound of wind and rain in Houston as the remnants of Tropical Storm Aaron dumped a torrent on the Texas coast. The roof of a grocery store collapsed under the weight of all that water, killing someone inside. Drivers in Houston and San Antonio were stranded on flooded roads. Ed Emmett, Harris County's top elected official, says it's been a good training session for Hurricane Dean.
Whatever we get from Dean, and hopefully it will be nothing, but if we do get anything, we could be experiencing a situation very similar to today.
Dean has strengthened to a Category 2 hurricane over the open Atlantic, and forecasters expect it to get even stronger as it moves into the eastern Caribbean. Computer models show Dean eventually tracking into the Gulf of Mexico. What a roller coaster ride on Wall Street today. The Dow dropped 342 points, then started the long climb back. At the end of the session, it was down just 15 points at 12,845. Ted Weisberg of Seaport Securities is a stock market veteran.
I cannot remember my 38 years on the trading floor, other than the crash of 87, any prolonged period where we saw this much volatility.
And we're going to see more, says Dave Siders, chief economist at the National Association of Home Builders.
This heavy drag from housing on the economy will continue through the year. I've got large negative contribution to economic growth in the third quarter and a pretty darn sizable one in the fourth as well.
Today, the Commerce Department reported that new home construction in July fell to its lowest level in more than a decade. A jury in Miami has found Jose Padilla and two co-defendants guilty of aiding terrorists and plotting attacks overseas. They could face life in prison. And Padilla had already spent 3.5 years in custody as an enemy combatant, and CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen says he was on the government's radar years earlier.
All of the evidence that these guys were convicted by really was generated long before 9/11. These guys were being surveilled in the 1990s, long before 9/11, long before most people knew who Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda was.
Charges that Padilla plotted a dirty bomb attack in an American city were never pursued. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports the Department of Homeland Security issued a threat assessment today.
Among the key findings, the report concludes that core Al-Qaeda, that is the bin Laden organization, will remain the leading terrorist threat to the homeland. The report also says that the senior leadership of Al-Qaeda continues to have as one of its primary objectives attacking the American economy and attacking the American people.
Just in from CBS News correspondent